welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on cagematch.net. I'm your host, Trigger. And as always, of course, joined by my man in the US, Dylan. Dylan, I ask this off air, but I'm going to ask you again. Are you ready for the year? For the biggest show of the year?
I'm going to tell you what I told you off the air, which is I've been ready for a month. I've been ready all my life. I didn't say that, but I added it in because it's more exciting when I say it that way. That's but I'm thankful. Thanks to all the people, all the voters, all the listeners, all the people that I love with all my heart. We are ready for the award show. Best of the year 2023 in Japanese pro wrestling from one of the best sports podcasts in existence, and that's not just my opinion. It's an objective fact.
Yes, it is apparently an objective fact by the sports podcast group. So shout out to this group. We were nominated in the best wrestling podcast section. Very surprised about that. We didn't apply. We were just apparently scouted for that. I'm still not 100% sure how it works, how we got there, but I'm very happy about it. Thankful for it, to be in company of some of the best podcasts about pro wrestling in the world. You can vote for us. We'll put up a link on our Twitter. Please vote for us. It would be cool to be in the conversation amongst the best of them. And, Dylan, that is really it makes me happy. It makes me proud at the same time, both of these feelings, because both you and I, we've been putting a lot of work in this show over the last almost 9 years, almost 10 years next year. We are going to celebrate the 10th anniversary next year. And, my thing about this podcast always was I don't want to shove it into anyone's face. I just want to sit here, talk about wrestling with you and gain and grow a listenership that really values the show for what it is, for our analysis of Japanese pro wrestling, without ever going out of the way to piggyback off some wrestler and have them on our show just to gain an audience from their stardom, to just be a podcast that does what they want to do and not to be a podcast that for whatever it takes, wants to be popular.
That's true. We applied through our knowledge, applied for our episodes, applied through our email that you forgot that we had.
Yes, I did.
We live this life. If you look at the awards, we're the only Japanese wrestling podcast that is listed, which is very cool and very interesting. And I love that we're a part of it. I love that we're a finalist. And I love that we were nominated. I love the listeners, love the voters. So thank you guys for that. Again, not just being nominated is a win for us. Obviously, in our the wildest dreams, we could win. That would be really cool. But thank you. I did check that very email. A shout out to Anthony Cooper from Sports Podcast Awards. He sent a very nice email to us. And I told him that, I love it, pretty much. Yes. I didn't just say that. I said other stuff, but, it would be boring to read the whole thing to him as I replied. It's a reply right now. But the fans make the show at the end of the day, and they proved it. I mean, it's such a cool thing, too, that on the eve of the award show that we're about to do, which had by far our highest amount of votes that we've ever had, whether it was the mid-year awards, the final year, end of the year awards in the past few years, we broke all of our records. And so yes. I just want to say thank you guys so much, everyone out there, all the guys and the girls out there who helped us out and really came through and delivered some great votes as well. I love that we have so much.
We got real depth on this show. We got a few categories that were pretty obvious that had runaway winners for a good reason or two. others were really widespread, and that's great, and that really displays what wide range we have in our listenership, that we have those fans that go for the New Japan Pro Wrestling votes, we have those fans that go for actress girls, we have those fans that go for Big Japan and for any other company that is around in Japanese pro wrestling. And that, once again, that's the thing that I'm really proud of, and that's always been the spirit of the show, not only New Japan Pro Wrestling, but everything in Japanese wrestling.
Absolutely, and I think our awards, and I know obviously I may be a little biased here, being on the show.
Are you?
But I genuinely think, when you look at these awards, I would put this list up against pretty much any other possible awards when it comes to Japanese wrestling especially. Just, like you said, the depth of it can't be matched by any other show. Like, no matter who it is, what wrestling show you listen to, there's no way if they did a poll you would get all of these corners that we were able to touch. You know, there's a little bit of everything here, whether it's Joshi had a lot of different votes in there, you know, whether it's down to Big Japan, DDT, Dragon Gate, High Flying, Lucha, you know, Lucha Resu, like everything that you could come into. And you know, obviously the big companies like New Japan, All Japan, Noah, the big three always get a lot of love. And I think that's just how it goes, you know, but we're not in control of that. Anybody could win. If everybody rallied behind wrestling from a lower company, a lower tier company, you know, that's allowed. Everybody is allowed to have their vote, have their say, no matter who it is, no matter what it is. And I'm very proud of the voters and the listeners, most of all, but I'm very happy to be a part of this. And the awards nomination is kind of like, you know, I don't want to say justification for everything, but I do put a lot of work into this show in general. Like, I do a lot of different things. And to see that get replicated with, or reciprocated rather, with a something like that that tells you, hey, you are one of the best. Like this is what that says. Like that. That's what the nomination says. Like that. That you are, you should be mentioned as among the best in this category. And I'm very thankful and happy for that. But ultimately, I would have been proud of this show anyway, regardless of an award nomination, because of the people that listen to it. You can see the just the knowledge that we get from these and the scope of which we get. Which I think, again, us. We were there for it, and like you said, we have our own style. We don't follow the trends or anything like that. But also, I think the listeners deserve a big part of this credit, because you know I couldn't be prouder of the amount of votes we got. And when you see this, this is, like I said, it feels like justification for everything that, hey, like this show has reached so many different corners of the landscape and so many parts of the Japanese wrestling, especially among English speakers, that society. So, again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you guys so much. And we are hopefully this could be the worst show ever for all I know that we're about to have and get us eliminated from ever being applied or nominated again. But I think we've got a heck of a show that we're going to try and repay it back to you guys. So hopefully everybody buckles up and has a good time. Let's get to the awards.
Yes. Before we get to the awards, I want to announce this at the beginning of the show. Of course, this is officially the fourth time that we do a show that is called Year-End Awards here on the Eastern Lariat. The shows before that, 2019 and prior to that, were always called Tokyo Sports Awards. And of course, we got away from that. We implemented our own voting system. And since 2020, this has been officially the Year-End Awards. And for the first time now, this year, we will induct two wrestlers to the official Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame. That is a concept that I borrowed for my other show from Straight Wrestling that I do with Morbo and Flosch in German on a cage match. The concept always was that we induct wrestlers that are important to the show, that have been talked about on the show a lot, that have been featured with different reviews on the show a lot. For example, Terry Funk is in the Straight Wrestling Hall of Fame because he was discussed a lot on different shows of Straight Wrestling. And we want to do a similar Hall of Fame where we don't like induct wrestlers that are necessarily the biggest or the biggest stars, but we want to induct wrestlers that mean a lot to this show, that we talk about on this show a lot, that are cornerstones of this show, that have been cornerstones for this show for the last 8 to 9 years. And that is going to be happening at the end of the show. So after the MVP awards, we're going to induct two wrestlers to this Hall of Fame, Dylan.
Yeah, this was all your brainchild here. Like you said, you started on straight wrestling, bringing it over to the Eastern Lariat. And what would you say, or, you know, how you explained it to me, especially when we did it, we brainstormed a little bit. This started a couple of months ago. This is your idea, and we kind of brainstormed a bit about how to implement it, and we decided to put both nominees on the year-end show, which I think is the right call, for sure. Because when you think about the Hall of Fames, I think everybody will always point to the Observer Hall of Fame when it comes to wrestling. I mean, there's many Hall of Fames. You can look at the Football Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, everything has a Hall of Fame, practically.
Yes.
What would you say for this particular Hall of Fame? Are there any qualifications for it that you would say?
There has to be a tenure that you had in Japanese pro wrestling. And this tenure has to span over the years this podcast has been around. For example, we did a show about the best of the decade a couple of years ago, best of the 2010s.
Yeah.
And we talked about Masaki Mochizuki there on this show. Masaki Mochizuki has been a wrestler that we've always cherished on this show, that we've always talked about a lot on this show, and that has had a lot of success in those promotions that we cover on this show. And that, in my opinion, qualifies you to be part of the Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame.
Yes. So it is a show-specific Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
So, you know, the first two candidates won't be like Ricky Dozan.
Exactly. On a regular Hall of Fame, we would like induct the biggest legends of Japanese pro wrestling, of course. But that would be
that's not what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just wanted to get that out of the way because, you know, I could see people being like, what? And like, why wasn't it Ricky Dozan? He started it, or Misawa or something like that. This is for the show, more or less, exactly. Not necessarily the scope of grand history of Japanese wrestling.
No, it's for the show. And it's mainly to create a feel-good moment for the Year End Awards show.
Absolutely. And I mean, this year, I think definitely will lead into that. So, yeah, I'm very happy about it. I'm very happy with how it played out, and I'm looking forward to getting to that. But that is at the end of the show. Right now, we need to get to the awards.
Yes, of course. We'll get to the awards and to the awards winners. Traditionally, on this show, we start with the best foreigner award. And much like in a few other categories, we had a runaway winner with Will Ospreay, who gained almost 40% of the votes for the Stan Hansen Award, of course, for the Best Foreigner Award. On number two, by the listeners, we have Zack Sabre Jr. And then it was very close. We have Chris Brooks on number three. Dylan, what's your take on this?
Yeah, you know, how when I sent you, because the way the nominees work, a lot of times maybe they'll split them based on a spelling change or something like that, and it's okay. Like, it's not, you know, I'm not anal about it. You know, if you make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. Like, I'll figure it out, you know, at the end of the day, and I do have to do a little extra work putting it together. It's not a big deal, but when you look at it, I think that when I sent you the awards, I tried to separate them. If somebody got one vote, I still counted them, but then I separated it with people who got more than one vote at the top, kind of the top tier.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, and then you look at the names you mentioned at the top, I think that they're all pretty, you know, pretty relevant and good picks, I would say, overall. Yes. You know, Ospreay, he's a guy that he had the peak moments, you know, that everyone will point to. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something a lot of people go to. Obviously, the Omega match at the start of the year, the G1, he was one of the best guys. Again, you know, and historically, I haven't always been he hasn't been my favorite, but I can also recognize that he's done a great job in the G1.
He was in the semifinal of the tournament. He also had the match with Maro Fuji in September, and of course the matches with Yuta Tsuji and Shota Umino for the United States Championship. So much like you said, the highlights were definitely there for Ospreay.
Zach's kind of the opposite, where he was around very consistent all year. I don't think any of his matches were match of the year level or anything like that, in my opinion, but he was always there defending the title, having a fun run against a variety of opponents. He did a great job. You know, just that consistency really goes a long way. Brooks, I think he, of everybody, meant the most to his company. Like, if we graded Foreigner as an MVP, I would probably say he would be the one I would go towards, because his title reign really turned it around after a dreadful first half of the year for DDT. I thought his title reign really kickstarted a much better second half of the year, and he was a big part of it.
That is actually one of the few companies where I would say that they had a better second half of the year than the first half of the year.
Yeah, I know that's a big talking point of yours, that the second half of the year wasn't as good as the first, which is accurate, I would say.
You can see it, and there was.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to the matches and the shows later on, but yeah, he would be the guy I would think would be like, he meant the most to his company. I think he was like, and he was the world champion of DDT, the top star. Ospreay was never that guy for New Japan. He was in and out. He wasn't, you know, he didn't have the consistency of a Zach because he had his AEW and his all around the world commitments. You know, if you count him for all of his worldwide stuff, that's different. But this is just in Japan, and I think he's still got a good case for the peaks. But I'd say all three of them have different strengths that you could draw upon.
What would you say, Dylan? The listeners went with Ospreay. With whom did you go?
I think he was a great pick for the peaks, but I think Brooks meant more to me for his company. I also would like to give an honorable mention to Akari from Pure J. She just put up a video which is, has English translations. I think she's really carrying on the, you know, such a great story that she has, but doing great work too in Pure J. Very talented performer. My pick, though, was the fourth place winner of the voters, which was Iode Dr. Wagner Jr. from NOAH, who is getting a title shot next month as well.
Yes, very hyped about that.
To me, he had a little bit of everything, because NOAH, they didn't have their best year this year. I think most would agree, but he did a great job in it. He was the secondary champion and really gained that national title a lot of prestige. Really gave a great run to it. Everybody wanted to know what he was going to do. He's very popular. Everybody was worried about his contract coming up at the end of the year, but he stayed on and is getting a nice little run now in 2024. I think his match quality, his consistency, and his importance to the company, he might not have been number one in any of those categories, but he had the greatest scale of all three of them combined. So I went with EO Dr. Wagner Jr.
Yes. He is my number three. I definitely see where he's coming from. There is definitely a case for him to be made. He has had a great year in Pro Wrestling NOAH. Improved a lot along the past couple of months. You mentioned his title runs and the N1 victory he was in, of course. Overall, though, I have two others slightly above him, and they are both Brits, and none of them is Ospreay. It is Zack Sabre Jr. on number two. And Chris Brooks on number one. For Will Ospreay, I want to say one of the most important things to me when I go with this category is for how long and for how many matches you've been there. And as you said, Ospreay had the peaks. But Ospreay, for example, in the second half of the year only had 19 matches in Japan. And while he qualifies for the peaks, I don't think he qualifies for the consistency and for the overall for what he overall means to his company. Of course, he is a big, big name, but Chris Brooks just means so much to DDT, and he means so much for the turnaround that the company had after the Yuji Hino title run, that I could only go with him as the best foreigner of the year, not only because of the title win that he had, but also because of the match quality that his title run has had. He had this amazing match with Saki Akai in September, the match with Shigeyori Irie 2 weeks before that, actually, And then also a very good match with Yuki Ueno to finally lose the title at Ultimate Party. So he was in the top matches for most of the second half of the year in DDT, and in my opinion, rightfully so, is very deserving of a top place. And for me, it's the place number one for the best foreigner.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't pick him is because the first half of the year was so weak for him outside of one match. And mm-hmm. I think he might as well have not been there. Like, yeah, he wrestled a lot. Like, you picked Brooks last year, and I made a similar argument that he didn't actually do that much, even though he wrestled a lot. But this year, you have the back half, which was so great and so important. I have no problem with that pick this year at all. I think Brooks had a great year. I wish I could have seen. I think Wagner was more consistent the full year through, and that's why I picked him. But Brooks, he kind of has, like I said, ultimately, if you judge it by who's most important to their company, Brooks has to win. Like, you know, he was the one that turned around DDT, and like you said, all of those matches are great. Saki was really important. The Irie match was rocked. I thought that was a fantastic match. You get the great moment, of him winning the title. It felt special, and that's something, DDT really missed a lot the first half of the year. So, like I said, the whole company really kind of followed him. When he was down and not doing that much, the company felt like it was doing not that great. But when he got up, man, DDT, like, they really rocked it. That was like if you look at a 6 month run, that was probably one of the better runs of theirs I can remember in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, like, probably since we've been doing this show, to be honest with you, at least for my taste and my favorites. And he was a great part of it. And Brooks, fantastic effort from him, and I hope he gets well soon. I know he had the health issue coming at the end of the year, but shout out to Brooks, big stuff there. Things are looking up for 2024. Can't wait to see him come back.
I think that Luis Monte would have had a case if he hadn't been away for so long.
He's another one. Yeah, yeah.
That's been really unfortunate for him that he had this weird cutoff after losing his mask and he went away for 2 months. Of course, he had a great comeback and won the Dreamgate title. Still, though, there is this gap in between that wasn't really filled well by Dragon Gate.
And he's another one. The first year, he really didn't do that much either. Like, you're looking at like a couple of months, like, you know, for him, that was great. And the cage match was fantastic. And that was an amazing. Yeah, the moment was great. The match was great. The cage match was awesome. Like, that to me was the best DG match this year, like, easily. Like, mm-hmm. the cage match.
Yep.
Then he got the win, which wasn't the best match of the year, the triple threat, but it was a good match, and it was him winning was a great moment as well. You know, so, but like I said, you're looking at a couple of months out of a year. I think that's tough a little bit. Kind of like what you said about Ospreay. Same thing with Ospreay. It's like he's there for the big matches, but like you said, I agree with you ultimately. The consistency wasn't there for me personally, but I don't begrudge the voters because I think that their reasoning behind it is solid. They just judge the peak higher, and we judge consistency a little bit more.
Someone that I want to mention here that did he get any votes? He got one vote actually, but I want to make a shout out for him. And Akara in Big Japan, he at the end of the year won the junior heavyweight title from Kaji Tomato, and he has been in the company for the entire year. He has been working in Japan mostly. Only went back to Europe for some shows in February and in the summer. He did the Scandi Grabs Invitational. He's, of course, from Sweden. And really a great junior heavyweight and a great pickup for Big Japan Pro Wrestling. We said it on our show last week that Big Japan is doing a good job, or has been doing a good job in 2023, but really doesn't really get a lot of attention. So Endakara, good pickup for Big Japan.
Yeah, they have a lot of people there they brought from the European scene, trying different things, bringing in these CZW guys now as well. So they have a lot of different foreigners in Big Japan at the moment. So a lot of different people. And he's one of the good ones, I would say. Like, Indycar has done a pretty good job and found a spot, you know, like for a guy like him, you know, that has to be a great thing to get to wrestle in Japan. So congratulations to him just for being there, having a nice run, doing some big things there.
Absolutely. So that's best foreigner. Next up is best rookie. And yeah, I mean, what can I say? We have another runaway winner, and even much clearer than Will Ospreay in the best foreigner award. The Junakiyama Legacy Rookie of the Year Award for a wrestler that must have debuted after December 31st, 2021, of course, goes to Yuma Anzai. There was no other logical choice. He gained 70% of the votes, and no one else, of course, came close, and he is my pick as well. That really is a complete no-brainer. I came by an article from Voices of Wrestling just this morning that also made this point. There is no other wrestler that comes to mind that has had a better year as a rookie performer than Yuma Anzai. You, of course, always shout out the Yuji Nagata title match that has been amazing and one of your favorite matches of the year. Yuma Anzai, it's almost unfair because he's so good and blends together so well with wrestlers that have much more experience than him. And it's been an incredible road to follow his rookie performances and see him grow alongside wrestlers like Hideki Suzuki he's been working with a lot. And the future is bright for him. So Yuma Anzai also is my pick for this award. I have on number two, Ryoya Tanaka from Dragon Gate. Tanaka, in my opinion, similarly to Yuma Anzai, when he came to the scene in Dragon Gate, he immediately fit in like a glove and was promoted to be part of D Courage very quickly. He had his first title shot for the Open the Brave Gate Championship after like 23 matches in his career, and he performed very well against Ishin on that stage. So they put him into deep waters very quickly, and Tanaka really swam. He is an incredible high flyer and fits in so well with these multiple matches in Dragon Gate, and that's not easy to really do your part in the multiple matches, and to be always on point in these multiple matches is really hard. So Ryoya Tanaka, in my opinion, has been great from the get-go and is only improving. And number three for me was Himawari from Tokyo Yoshi Pro Wrestling. I said it in the half-year awards that she has very good fundamentals, has a very good grasp of what she should be doing inside the ring. Her movement has been better from her first match on than some of the veteran wrestlers in TJPW. And I said it in October of this year, after a little over 5 months later, Himawari has really improved significantly. And this, she has been the best of her peers that have debuted in TJPW this year. She has been put in many, many multiple matches and tag matches since, where she proved that she is the best rookie of their group right now. And for me, number three for rookie of the year.
Yeah, you know, I think that those are all pretty good picks. To me, this category was so easy to decide. I mean, Anzai was the only choice to me of this that it could possibly be to win. When you look at the rest, I mean, a lot of these are good that were nominated, pretty much. I think that you can look out for some other people. I like Masada in DDT, just from a pure talent level. I think that he's the one that... he has the biggest, the highest floor, let's just put it that way. Ceiling could go either way with a lot of these guys and girls, but I think his understanding of wrestling and the basics and how he wrestles is at the top of anybody. I'd pick him. Really, a lot of them have good things. Since Zone's got a vote, I'll say that Chi-Chi should be nominated as well, the superior of the Evo girls. But Zones is good too. All of them are good. Tanaka, you said, was really good. He came in like halfway through the year, and he still was great. Like for match one, you could see that this guy has something. He reminds me a lot of T-Hawk, actually, like in how he wrestles. I think he could be at that level as a worker going forward. I think he's a really great guy in the making for DG. The New Japan guys all have good stuff to them, I would say. Good stuff. But the thing is, Anzai was such an overwhelming choice by the fans, and he should have been. It would have been weird if he didn't blow everyone away, which he did. By far, the number one vote getter of any category was this. So congratulations to Yuma Anzai. Clean sweep for all of us. And a lot of great rookies. The future's bright for Japanese pro wrestling in general, for a lot of the companies. So hopefully some good things are coming forward for all these names that got nominated.
What do you think about the second place for the listeners, Kisuna Tanaka, the daughter of Minoru Tanaka and Yuma Fukawa?
Yeah, and she's really good. You know, all of her matches from the start, she's been good. She has a lot of the talent of her parents there, and they just had an Arsteon tribute show yesterday.
She wrestled on it.
Yeah, and so did her mom, for the first time in 22 years.
Yeah.
as well. And they had the whole show is basically that moment of them hugging and Fukawa passing the torch to her daughter, kind of. Her dad is one of my favorites ever, Minoru Tanaka. So she's got a great history. She wrestles. She takes a lot from him, especially in the ring. I'd like to see where her career goes. The Joshi scene is up and down, but she's great. If you are a Joshi fanatic, I think she's as good of a pick as any. You could look at her. I think Azusa has a lot of great potential as well. She got a nomination, and I think she's got a clearer path to stardom. But no pun intended on that end, through her sister, than Kizuna is starting a Wave. But Kizuna could be a great worker for years to come, and with Wave, I mean, they don't have a lot of people, so somebody has to be the young ace. And I love Kohaku, but they haven't really used her to her fullest extent of their abilities, and I think they see a lot more in Kizuna. So great pick, nothing wrong, but any pick besides Anzai to me is automatically not the correct choice, in my opinion. With all due respect to these folks,
absolutely. Would you shout out anyone else?
Oleg. I love seeing him in New Japan. I think he's got a great old school look going back to the days of old.
Yeah, he does. They've done so little with him, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Same thing with Oscar. These guys have a lot to them, but they're stuck in, the Young Lion system doesn't... it doesn't benefit you to stand out the way some of these other folks do. Toga, I like seeing her get a vote.
TJP. Yeah, I know, and it's her in the half year. I think, though, that she hasn't really gotten the opportunity to shine in the second half of the year, used mostly in undercard multi-man matches, so not like Himawari that she got really an opportunity to impress a lot of fans.
Wakana got the most votes. She got two votes for Tokyo.
Yeah, she's from this group, the one that gets promoted the most. She had the singles match with Aja Kong at the first show of TJPW in Kurikan Hall now. And she is pretty good for her tenure in wrestling. Still, though, from what I see, better wrestler is Himawari.
Yeah, that's all fair and well and good. Glad Anzai got the win, most importantly, yeah. Though. But all of these are good.
All right, Dylan. Next category. Most underrated. And we've made this an experiment, basically, for another voting period. But I think, and we discussed this off the air, we are going to erase this category from our awards because it is so subjective. It is so maybe not specific enough to have a really objective vote on who is underrated, because everybody has a different take on that. And man, we have so many different answers. How many names do we got listed? Some of them were listed twice because of the spelling, of course, you said, but we got up to 80 different names on this spreadsheet we have here. So this is not going to be a category that is going to be staying around for the Eastern Lariat. For the half-year awards, we think of something else. But Dylan, what's your take on most underrated?
Yeah, like I said, I counted the names, so they're not listed twice. The list I sent you, I don't think. Maybe I let somebody slide, but I don't think I did. Regardless, though, there was a lot of people. Overall, pretty much everybody got one vote, and for a lot of people, that adds up a lot. And like you said, the problem is it's so subjective. You know, we were talking about off the air. You could argue everybody has a case, and then you were arguing that nobody was a good pick, almost. So it's
everybody and nobody has a case.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing. It's like you can argue both sides of those arguments yeah. as well. So it's like, you know, it never goes anywhere. But still, for this year, we had the award. We got to look. I mean, I think it's interesting to see. Again, that's why I separated the ones and the ones who got more than one. I think it's interesting who got more than one and who people kind of latched on to. There was more, like, Hinari got more votes than any of the half-year vote-getters. It was, like, all ones in the half-year. Mm-hmm. This year-end, we actually got multiple people getting more than one vote, which was good. But it's interesting the names they came up with.
Hinari wasn't mentioned a lot in the half-year, I think. He had this big Shingo match in the first 6 months of the year.
And the
later part, of course, he was in the G1, but he didn't get a lot. And yeah, it's almost unfortunate for him. Always unfortunate for him. I have him on as my top underrated as well, because he never really gets talked about by anyone. I mean, he's been the biggest company, and he always falls off because nobody discusses him. Nobody really thinks of him whenever we discuss opportunities. And now the Reiwa 3 are in. They take the spots. He's been in New Japan Pro Wrestling for how many years has he been there? For almost 10 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right around that point.
Right around the point. Let's see. His debut in
2014, maybe?
And 16, actually.
8 years.
Yeah, 8 years in New Japan. I don't know if he'll ever get somewhere in this company, actually. That is unfortunate because he's very, very good and can be a very good utility player for the company. They use them so sparely. That is why I have him on my number one as well. And other names that I want to mention, I don't think that they even appeared on the listing that we have. I have to browse.
That's how you know that they're underrated.
Yes. There's actually one that I also have. And of course, yes, there are guys that you can mention, like Seigo Tachibana, like Jackie Funky Kamei. Those are names that don't necessarily have the biggest claim to their name. But nobody really thinks that they are... I mean, in the case of Seigo Tachibana, people do think that he's not good. But Jackie Funky Kamei, nobody thinks that he's not good in any way. What I have, though, is I want to make a case for the devil. And I want to make a case for evil. Evil for the House of Torture. We said it off the air briefly, Dylan, you and I said that you could pick the House of Torture, anyone from the House of Torture, and I picked evil. Of course, he has dreadful matches. The Zanada match in the G1 I still despise. But you can't deny that what he is doing and what this act is doing is getting a lot of attention and a lot of heat. And whenever he is in a singles match, whenever anyone of the House of Torture is in a singles match, you can see that the fans are rallying behind the opponent for them to defeat the House of Torture. It's not good technical wrestling. It's not any wrestling that I fancy, but you can't deny that it is successful. And it, in my opinion, doesn't get the flowers that it deserves, so to speak. That's my House of Torture take.
It really worked when they put him in the title match for Sonata, too. Look at all the fans that show drew. It was so successful. Like, it was clearly just got the imagination of the fans, and it drew such a huge number. We were all wrong. No, it did a terrible number, actually. Like, that's not exactly... Like, what you said is totally wrong. It's not successful at all. Like, nor is it... Like, yeah, okay, it gets negative heat from the fans, but that doesn't mean anything because it's go-away heat. Like, that's proven. Like, he's not a draw at all. Like, it turns away from the fans. So,
yes, yeah,
I think that's such absolutely. An overrated... There's a if minor...
You,
like,
if you put him in a main event position, that has always been my take. That has always been my take that if this is not a main event act. Still, though, as an act for itself that is a part of the card, it gets a lot of heat behind those that are supposed to be the babyfaces and the and the bigger stars for the company. Never use them in any main event role. That is absolutely not the case, and I'm not advocating for it to be a successful act at the box office. That's not my take. But I still think that there's a lot of people that just say that whatever they do is not effective, and that's not the case.
I mean, if you're turning the fans away and nobody wants to watch you, that to me is not effective. Like, regardless, like, yes, you get negative heat because people don't want this on their show, not because it's successful. Like, I think that's two different reactions, in my opinion.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. But the overall reaction for me is, of course, always that I don't want to watch the match. But when I see those that are in attendance, and I've had someone from Germany who has been in attendance for the Noah show, the heat for evil at the Noah show was absolute peak level, and you can't deny that.
There, I mean, that was actually, of the House of Torture matches, the Noah show was pretty well done, I would have to say, overall. But yep. In general, I think people read, that's like Americanized brain thinking crowd heat is this great thing. Like, you know, that, like, I don't know. Maybe it is. The evidence we have, again, from a, you were kind of like, you know, you're twisting yourself in the knots trying to defend this. Like, oh, it's successful, but not in the main event, but actually it has a place at the bottom of the card. But yeah, actually, we don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think it kind of makes the whole show look embarrassing a little bit, actually. Like, I've always said that. Like, it makes me not even watch the whole show or want to watch the whole show. But you know, he could still be a little underrated because he's not. I never thought he was a great worker. Like, even at his peak, pretty much. Like, I thought he was like any kind of stereotypical, like a low end, like a poor man's Goto, like type of guy. And the best he could have. He had the match with Okada. A lot of people said he was that great, and I said he wasn't. But he's better than this. Like, he's better as a worker than what we give him credit for. And somebody nominated Sho, and I thought that was a great pick, because we know he's a great... Like, I did think he was a great worker. Unfortunately, with the House of Torture gimmick, he's awful. So,
that's,
you know, there's...
That's why I don't think that he's a good pick, actually. I thought about Sho, and I don't see the motivation anymore in him.
That's true. I mean, but I think it's hard to be motivated with this kind of gimmick. You know, you're obviously not there to have good matches or anything.
No.
You know, it was funny when they broke into the office, though.
Great angle.
Yeah.
It's.
I don't know. I really think that the whole they get heat point is really overrated. Like, I don't think it works that way in Japan. I think that's like a very small clique of Western fans that say that, you know, overall, that means something good. But, you know, Evil, he has nice hair.
He has nice hair. You know who also has nice hair? And who I also like that you don't like? It's Hio of Dragon Gate. I really like the guy. And the second half of the year, in my opinion, has shown that he has much more potential than anybody gave him credit for his run in Zebrats with Luis Mante. Has established one of the most liked tag teams in Dragon Gate as Big Hug. Dragon Gate has also trusted him with a main event position with Ishin, and I thought they did a very good job in that match. Match I rated 8 out of 10 points. He has been the open the Brave Gate champion for some time now. I'm not actually sure for how long now. And in my opinion, has had a good singles run. One of the best runs that he's had in his career, except for the Mochizuki Dojo days. So for me, he is one of those underrated guys.
Yeah, you know, Dramatic Dream Dragons... you know, my co-host on there, Sandra and Yannick, they're not fans of Hio. Like, they always talk bad about him a little bit. And you are the Big Hug respector, if there ever was one. Hio, to me, I think the problem with him is I would like him to get new gear, first of all, from the Zebrats stuff. Just still wearing it is really goofy and dumb, in my opinion. And he's just kind of the same as he always was. Like, to me, he's not that different.
I've created them as a tag team on cage match, but I've not created an entry for Big Hug yet because I'm still waiting that this is going to lead anywhere, but it doesn't. I mean, they did this angle with Jackie Funky Kamai, and he decided to stay with Natural Vibes, and I sat there and said, ha, that didn't go anywhere, okay. So I'm still waiting for this to actually unfold.
Yeah. I mean, they're the champions, like, right now of the company. They're clearly the pushed act. And, hey, mm-hmm. yo, like I said, I feel like he hasn't changed that much from his heel run. Like, the crowd really loves Big Hug and him in his matches, too. Like, they clearly like him a lot, which is, you know, I can't deny that. As a worker, he doesn't really grab me as much as a lot of the roster on DG, and he's gotten a lot of chances, like, as well, over some people that I like, the aforementioned Jackie from Funky Kame, who I'd really like to see get the kind of chances he gets. But, you know, he's over with the fans, and I think the turn from Zebratz was a good move. Like, that helped him out a lot. I hope that we could see a little bit more change in him, and, like, even just getting new gear is the most basic change we could just have. To not wear your Zebratz gear and to part of Big Hug. I think that's a simple. That's not a hard request I'm making here. But as a worker, he's doing all right. But he's not somebody that I would consider great.
Who else do you have?
I always go to Sato, like Hikaru Sato, somebody I consider underrated. You know, he's a guy that always does good things. You know, always in an undercard role, never really pushed that much. But just stylistically and at his base, like the core mechanics that he has as a wrestler, I think he's among the top that there could ever be, or maybe not could ever be. That's a little dramatic, but still, he's really one of the best in my opinion. He would be an honorable mention. Kotage, very underrated. I saw him got a nomination. He's one of my favorites, mm-hmm. but I don't think he's that motivated lately. You know, Ooh. This past year, he hasn't had a lot to do. Really, maybe this Team Noah thing will bring something out of him. But he's another guy. I mean,
I wouldn't hold my breath, to be quite honest.
It's not off to a great start like right now, but you know, he's a guy, like, again, he's another one, like, if you just look at his skill set as a wrestler, he has all the tools, and somebody that I really appreciate. I went with Yu Iizuka as my number one for this. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy, being a Glate, you're screwed pretty much no matter who you are. But he especially, I remember his feud with Izuchi last year, and everybody was talking about their matches. They were really dynamic. They had the great, like, 30-second match that everybody, like, got everybody's attention. Yeah. And he was awesome in, like, the last 2 years. Then he just kind of goes down, and it's like he's kind of gotten passed by to even the fans of the company. And I think you look at his skill set again. If you look at the skill sets of these wrestlers, that's kind of what I look at with this award. He is a dude, man. Like, he can wrestle so good and have great matches. He's not put in position to, and I can understand that, you know, out of sight, out of mind to a lot of fans, but man, this guy is such a dynamic worker. If he were to get a push somewhere, he would go crazy. I think have, like, a great matches up and down. You know, he has the most untapped potential of anybody, which is kind of, I guess, where I went with this award. Like, somebody who I think has a tons of upside and hasn't got to really release it yet and hasn't gotten noticed for it.
Mm, yep. I mean, you could make the case for a lot of talent on the great roster.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, there's tons of guys you could go to. He's the one that I think has the most. I think he's the best worker, like, mention.
I agree.
Overall.
Yep. So we got that covered.
I really have no problem with Hanare either, like, mm-hmm. the fans pick. You know, I think that's a good vote.
Yes, my vote.
He stepped up. So, yep. Yeah. Your vote as well. He stepped up in the G1. You know, did some good stuff, the best he could in C Block. And he came through in the end. A lot of people are saying that he should have gotten the match against Shingo instead of Tonga at the Wrestle Kingdom. But they had other plans, seems like, for that. But he's good, though, and we'll see what he does this year. Especially considering what's happening with the faction, like, you know, the cage match coming up, and who's going to break up and split off and blah, blah, blah.
There is, of course, always the possibility that they suddenly see something in someone. We've seen that they suddenly pushed David Finlay very strongly. But the evidence with someone like Hinari hasn't been there, actually. He has been a utility player for his group, and that's where he's been. Yeah, so that is this category, we are moving on to the next one, which is most improved. Dylan, what do you have?
Yeah, for me, there's a lot of guys you could go with. You know, the Saito brothers got a lot of votes, I hear. You know, everybody pointed to them. Soya, I think, you know, stepped up big this year. We kind of talked about it when we talked about the Noah show last episode. Yeah. That we hoped that maybe Kita Miya could take a similar jump that Soya made last year. Even Wagner Jr., I think he's a guy that, you know, you look at him at the N1, like in 2022, and when he won the title, beat Inamura, and everybody was disappointed. Look at where he ended up. I mean, I thought that was a big improvement, as well.
The improvement, in my opinion, happened in the first half of the year predominantly.
Yeah, absolutely. When I look at others,
for example, like you mentioned, Manabu Soya, he had the great match with Wagner Jr. early in the year, and he also had great matches at the end of the year. Whereas Wagner, he stabilized himself on a certain level, on a certain very good level. I think Manabu Soya exceeded him in the last couple of months, so that's why I have him above Wagner Jr.
What was his big match the last few months of the year?
The match with Goshi Ozaki in the N1.
I think that Wagner's match with Ozaki was better, personally. I don't know what the cage match ratings are.
I don't have them in front of me, but I came away liking the Soya match a bit more. But of course,
the Wagner Go match was like the best match of the tournament to me. Like that was up there, like in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, they're both up there. Like, I think they both have good cases. Like they were both improved a lot overall. I think Wagner had the more of a stable push and all that stuff. But to me, though, my number one was a clear choice to me. Like there was somebody who stood out right away. Somebody who went, you know, for so long, even the first half of the year, kind of not bad, but just floating around, really. Like somebody who I didn't really have any interest in at all. Like somebody who I had no expectations for. And then, so I don't know what happened or why it happened now of all times after so many years, but I had to go with somebody who didn't get any votes, unfortunately.
Okay.
But to me, the clear pick was Mad Mikey Nichols.
Yes, that's a great pick, actually.
Nobody stood out to me the way he did from such a low. And I'm not saying he was the number one wrestler in the tournament, but I came in, he wouldn't have been, you know, he would have been in my bottom tier, pretty much, like somebody who I had no interest in whatsoever. And for some reason, he just decided to lay it all on the line and just like go crazy, like hard hitting, the headbutts, the master blaster, like everything he had. He threw it out, left his heart in that ring. And I really respected that so much. Just how much effort he put in. I was like, wait a minute. Like, you are a dude. Like, this is like, where was this? Where was this the last 5 years we've seen you in New Japan? You know, and to see it come out in such a dramatic fashion was so damn cool. And I just thought it was a great story. And a guy that I just loved his run in the G1. I thought he was one of the standout players. And he continued on with the tag team with TMDK. I think the tag work, again, that he kind of settles back into the Haste level, so to speak. But still, he doesn't twerk, so I like him better, actually, than Haste now. You know, and Haste was a guy, when they were in Noah, everybody pointed at Haste as the dude of the team. But man, Nichols in that tournament, who could have expected such a... like, that was such an outrageous, like, you know, unexpected underdog story. And I think even somebody like Wagner and Soya, they had moments in the past, at least, you could point to. Even the Saito brothers. Like, I like them as young lions. I think the Voodoo Murder stuff was, like, terrible. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of bringing back the House of Torture. Like, let's say somehow Evil turned babyface. He would probably have pretty solid matches, and everyone would say, ah, like, he's so improved. But really, it was the gimmick that held him down. More like, and I feel the same way about the Saitos. Like, if it wasn't for the Voodoo Murder stuff, they could have been at a similar level, I think. And they obviously stepped up. They did improve somewhat. But I don't think it was as drastic as Mikey Nichols, who has not been any kind of special talent for years and years. And then you see it here, and he's like, oh my god, like that was like one of the best matches of the tournament. And then he had like three more great matches. The match with Hanari to start off the tournament, the most unexpected banger ever. He had great matches with everybody. I'm going with Mad Mikey. He's my pick for the most improved.
To me, the Saito Brothers improved so significantly that I also went with them, much like the listeners. It struck me when I, of course, saw that match with Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi, where they were so great in it as babyfaces. But it also struck me when I saw the individual performances that Rei Saito has put on in the D-King Grand Prix and the singles match that they had at the end of the year for All Japan Pro Wrestling. I thought was a proper banger. And that is something that I don't think they would have been able to do at the beginning of the year. They were still finding their footing in this awful heel gimmick. But after they basically let go from the Voodoo Murders gimmick, it was all go for them. They won the tag titles. And not only did win the tag titles as an act that gets assistance, but they often lead the matches that they are in. And for that, I think that they, like I said, improved the most in this year.
Yeah, they're not a bad pick. I think they, again, if it was by output, then yes, because they were awful in the Voodoo Murders gimmick. But again, I think that was more the gimmick than them, in my opinion. But they did step up still. Like, they still improved a lot at the end of the day. So I really have no problem with that pick at all. Saito Brothers deserve a lot of credit. You know, and they've done a lot of great things. They've really got themselves out there. They're on TV in Japan, like local TV, trying to go to different places they have.
And that's a great sign, actually, for them and for the company. When you gain somewhat of a mainstream attention, that is something that Japanese pro wrestling does very rarely.
Yeah, and anyway, it's still a small time, but still, like, anything's better than nothing, and you're getting a lot out of these guys. Like I said, I always liked them a lot as young lions. They can, or, you know, rookie wrestlers. They, like I said, the Voodoo Murder stuff was awful. Like, there's no, like, ifs, ands, or buts about that. And like you said, as time went along and they got the further away from that, they got to show their true potential. And I'm happy that people are now seeing that. And now everybody likes them. I mean, you know, like, who is against them? Like you said, singles act, too. They did some good work. Rei, I thought, was one of the better guys of the DDT tournament.
Absolutely, yes. By the way, the ratings that they asked for the Wagner versus Shiozaki match has a rating of 8.5 flat. Okay. And Shiozaki versus Soya is 8.44, so very close.
Yeah. Yeah, so you could go either way on that. Absolutely. I don't think there's a significant difference between the end of their years. But regardless, they're both great. And same thing with the improved. Saito Brothers definitely deserve some love, you know, for sure.
So that brings us to the best promotion. And yeah, I think we also had a runaway winner here. Let me see.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, very clearly. Over 50% of the votes went with All Japan Pro Wrestling. And realistically, for me, there was no other choice to go with them as well. They've had... I don't even need to make a case again, because you can just listen to all of our shows over the last year where we make the case for All Japan Pro Wrestling. They have been great. They have built their roster very successfully, to the point that they were able to get one of their best crowd draws in Yoyogi at the end of the year, with bringing in Katsuyuki Nakajima was a complete new twist for the company. They had Yuji Nagata in as a champion at the beginning of the year, went to Yuma Aoyagi, who was successful as a champion, built up Ryokyu Honda, built up Takao Omori, but Hokuto Omori, built up Rising Hayato and Atsuki Aoyagi into stars for their audience. So when you look at companies for just the where they were at the end of 2022 and at the end of 2023, I think there is no question that All Japan Pro Wrestling has been the best company in Japan. What say you, Dylan?
Yeah, there's how can you argue anything you said there? You made a great point, too. That one of the keys to their buildup this year is how they've elevated so many people. Mm-hmm. Even the Saito brothers, I think, are much better off than they were a year prior. You know, you look up and down that roster, almost all of their young talent that they need to step up and be guys, nearly everybody is better off than they were, you know, at the, you know, from December 31st, they're way better off than they were January 1st of last year. And I think that's a testament to how well they've done. They've tried a lot of different things as well. You mentioned the Nagata thing. They, you know, by the end of the year, obviously the stuff with actress girls and WWE wasn't that popular, but it's different at least. I mean, they're trying different things. You know, they had the New Japan guys come in and be all right, like do a fine job in All Japan and have a good run. They've really turned to the young talent, and they, I think all of the young talent are awesome, and they've delivered, and hopefully they continue down that road in 2024, because I think now, like, now we're at the hard part almost for the company's growth, because now they have to go all the way with some of these guys. And they did a decent job with Aoyagi, but I really think that I didn't like how his title reign ended. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll stand by that right now. They've got Nakajima, again, another one, like something totally unexpected. Nobody saw that coming at the start of the year, bringing in different stuff.
And he also suddenly feels like a dude, right? Came into this company, suddenly it feels okay, that's a guy that you can build your company around, whereas in Noah, he never felt like that.
No, absolutely. In Noah, he was never a successful draw, and it shows you how much...
Yeah, not only that, he never felt like he could be.
I think when he won the N1 a couple of years ago, I think he's always had an aura to him. Ever since he kind of turned, like, you know, after the clean cut, boring title reign he had a few years ago.
Yeah,
when he grew up the hair.
Very much more successful. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't even that successful, but he had an aura to him that they didn't fully utilize. Like, once he grew out the hair, he had a great smile. I compared Tsuji when he came out to New Japan. He had a very, like, similar Nakajima swagger to him. Got great theme music when he walked out. He had a great look. Obviously, had all kinds of incidents knocking people out as well. Like, he had shoot credibility, you know. But I think that all got hurt with the Fujita stuff. Like, how his title reign ended really killed any star power that he had. And now through this Kento feud, like, it started in Noah with the Kento feud. That really was a renaissance for him and gave him a second life that I don't think he would have had if he had never faced Kento. And then, of course, Noah didn't capitalize on it at all, on all the buzz they had. So he left, and All Japan has totally capitalized on it and done a great job. I think they've fantastically used him. I think he always had it in him, but it just was never allowed. It was never nurtured in Noah the way it should have been. And in All Japan, they're doing a great job. And just he's been there for a couple of months. It's not, and they've already made so many great steps in that short time.
They have, yes. One thing I forgot to mention for most improved, quickly want to get this in here. I want to give a shout out to Yuri from Ganbare Pro Wrestling. She was the ISX Infinity Champion for a couple of months this year. And also, from what I saw from her in 2022, she improved a lot in 2023 to the point that they trusted her with the championship in Ice Ribbon and also in Ganbare with their own women's roster that they have built there. She is one of the best there and has been a utility player for the scene. For the entire scene, for the entire Yoshi scene, she has been wrestling in different companies. So she really gained a lot in 2023.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at the start of the year, they had bigger plans for Gonjo. You know, you had Yuna Manase's injury that kind of put a halt to some things. But she's coming back. Yuri's doing some good work as well. I totally agree with what you said about her. She's a very enjoyable wrestler on Ganbare Pro, and they have a great vibe there. I like almost all of their shows, and she's a good part of that as well. So, yeah, good stuff there. I totally agree with that pick.
Yes, and for the promotions, for me, it was really hard to find any other company that I would actually mention for places 2 or 3, because I don't think that a lot of companies have had great years.
Yeah, true.
So, almost by default, because of the heights that the company has produced, I went with New Japan Pro Wrestling for my number 2. I don't think there is any other that you can realistically make a case for.
No, when you count everything in total, the show, the quality, the wrestling, and the business sense, like, they're so far above everyone else that they are like default number 2, and All Japan actually showed growth this year, which a lot of the other companies didn't.
Exactly.
And they were the more enjoyable company to follow than New Japan, in my opinion. So Yeah, I can't argue with that at all. And they were the second best amount of vote getters, but I mean, it was a very one-sided towards All Japan.
Yes, yes. Then I went back and forth between two companies that I watched a lot in the last year. That's Dragon Gate and DDT. And I ultimately went with Dragon Gate for my number three. Dragon Gate hasn't had a good year necessarily, but DDT hasn't had either. I thought that Dragon Gate over the course of this year has produced some big moments. Like for the first half of the year, the Madoka Kikuta title win was a big moment for me. Then Shimizu being built up was a big moment for me. Luis Mante, obviously, him losing his mask. I think they developed the talent very well. They built both Kota Minura and Big Boss Shimizu to threats to the Dreamgate title. Something I wouldn't have thought after the King of Gate that Minura won over Shimizu. I wouldn't have thought that Shimizu would have had it in him to still be a credible challenger. So they built that. And they also built back the fan base to the point that they recently, just this week, had a show in Osaka in Eden Arena number 2, where they drew, let me see what they did. They did 879 fans in Osaka. So they built back their fan base. They still have these shows, these small tour shows where they have crowds in the 200s and 300s. But for the most part, they have done well for their fan base. So I went with Dragon Gate for my number 3, and DDT would be an honorable mention of 4. And also, not a success really this year, but we've said it briefly, Big Japan has had some ideas in this year that they have been going with for most part of the year was, of course, Yuya Aoki's title run that has been great, but also Project Havoc coming in was a new idea for them. So they are trying things, and hopefully for them, some of them materializes in 2024.
Yeah, I'd go Big Japan as my number 3. I think they had more going on for them than the other two. The other two could be described like as virtual opposites of each other. The first few months, yeah. DG was really going well. And then the second half of the year, they really fell off. DDT totally sucked the first half of the year. I thought they were an awful company. And in the back half of the year, they really turned it around with the aforementioned Brooks title reign. So it's like you've got a tale of two halves for both companies. And depending on whichever one you want to say, they're about the same. Big Japan, I thought, were more consistent for the overall year. They aren't successful nor popular, but I do think that they at least tried a lot in the past year. And I think Aoki is a great champion, a great leader. And Ishikawa had a really strong deathmatch run as well.
Yes, true.
They tried the thing with the Project Havoc. You mentioned Indukara earlier, which he's a part of. This is like this Daimanji So-led faction with all Europeans pretty mm-hmm. much around him. But it's good. Like, Big Japan's a pretty good company. They got some good young talent in there. I think up and down, they've got some pretty good shows. Again, they're not my favorite, but I think in a weak year with a lot of down companies, I could put them as a number 3. But really, All Japan was by far the best one.
It's crazy how far Stardom has fallen off, because they always were a stalwart for this category in recent years.
Last year, I thought they were by far the best company. Mm-hmm. And even the year before that, I thought they were the ones that really got the most out of the pandemic era wrestling. I mean, this year was just, they just really fell off. Like, it wasn't a good year at all for them, I would say. But they did have the biggest show that they ever had with All-Star Grand Queendom.
Yep.
And the end of the year show turned out all right. Like, it turned out pretty successful despite injuries and people getting fired, you know, the president going out and all of that stuff, turmoil and all that. They got through all of that to have a strong ending to the year, even though, again, the show at the end of the year wasn't great. It definitely can't compare to the one last year. Like, there's no way it can. But I thought they at least ended with some positive momentum. But overall, though, with all the injuries, with all the turmoil backstage, with the attendance going way down, like especially for some of these tour shows they had, the last 3 months were like low. So it's interesting how that worked. But just definitely a big step down. Like, if you compare 2023 to 2022, it's just a, you can't say they were the promotion of the year if you could go by who improved the most. Like, where did they start? Where did they finish? I thought it finished way lower than they started in 2023.
For 2024, Dylan, is there a company that you expect a similar year for, like All Japan Pro Wrestling has produced?
Well, All Japan's throwing so much stuff at the wall right now that maybe this Nakajima thing they just ride this wave and they continue to improve and steadily go up as year goes along. You know, if that happens, you could see that. Stardom has potential to do good. They're going to have people coming back. Yep. They've changed the format. You look at the schedule, it's not going to be what it was last year. They've really lightened the load a little bit. Never mind the wrestlers, but on the fans, I think that was important to not have so many shows over and over and have all these pay-per-views. You know, it's killing people, man. You know, they can't follow it that much. Noah, I mean, it'll be hard to be worse than last year, just from a narrative perspective. Yeah. You know, maybe they can find, you know, maybe this is the year Kaito gets a big run at the end there, you know, and we look at the end of the year, they've done this great job and built him up. And like I said, the House of Torture, I'm not their biggest fans, but I thought they utilized them pretty well on the Noah show. And Kaito got to look the best he could out of it, I guess. I think the less they work with New Japan, the better it'll be for him specifically. overall.
That would be the case for any company, I guess. But I agree.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
A less is more. Stardom really has the potential to be the best company in the country. I also think that a company, a Dragon Gate with a clearer focus, with a clearer direction in the big match situations, can be a company that at the end of the year, when we look back, could be in consideration. Because they have a strong roster, but what they lack is the storytelling that really has been a weak point of theirs in the last year.
Yeah, that they used to be so great at, but they've really struggled with it the last year or so. So I think that's something they definitely need to improve on. What about New Japan? Like, what do you think of their outlook going into this year?
For New Japan,
status quo. It's a, you know.
We talked about it at the Tokyo Dome show. Let's say they really get 38,000 for the Tokyo Dome. That would be really great for them, but it doesn't only depend on that. It also depends on how they develop Yota Tsuji, Shoto Umino, Ren Arita, Yuya Uemura, and there are so many variables in that direction that it's really hard for me to make a case or say that they could have a banger year next year. I think, but what you said, they probably will remain the status quo.
Yeah, you know, Tanahashi is the president. Maybe he's got some new ideas. I mean, we're seeing this cage match coming up, which is a different, like, way out of their usual playbook. Very cool and exciting, actually. I think it's great that they're doing it. That's one of the things I'm most hyped for. And then on the other hand, your big match for Naito is Sonata again, like a rematch. So, which is the exact opposite of the cage match in terms of fresh booking and all of that. It's interesting. And I, like you said, I think the young guys are going to be the ones to watch. I still think, again, based on their normal booking patterns, I think we may not get as much of a push for them as a lot of people want. At least in this year, I think they're going to take a slow approach as they have always done pretty much.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think they'll get I think at least we'll see some moments for them, which I think last year was kind of missing, other than like, hey, like Tsuji wrestled, like, and Umino got to go for the US title. Like, they got to wrestle, but they didn't get the big win, I think, that they would need to take a step forward. I think at least one of them will get a big win this year. They'll take a shot on somebody, but I think it might be a little early for big changes. Like we kind of said, we talked about it on the Dome Show, we think, and we both said it, that Naito should hold this title all year. Which I think it's the smart thing to do from a business perspective, but as a fan perspective, that doesn't intrigue me very, very much. Like there's nobody he can wrestle that will do a lot for me, really. Like maybe some of these young guys, again, that they might have a chance at, but for a title reign, we'll see how it goes. I'm not completely negative, but I'm not hot on them either. I'm in a wait and see mode with New Japan, and I expect the status quo to continue.
Yeah, they're 2 or 3 years away from the idea of Naito and Hiromu Takahashi doing anything for me. Naito and Tsuji could be interesting, but other than that, a year long Naito run, yeah, that would be successful at the box office probably. Not something I look forward to the most. Yeah. Yes, that is the company. Show of the year actually really proves my point. We have a winner with Stardom All-Star Grand Queendom. Second place, Muto Last Love. Third place, Wrestle Kingdom 17 Night 1. All shows in the first half year, Dylan.
Yeah, they were all the biggest shows. I think, like I said, if you go back and look at it, I think most years, all of the top shows will be at the start of the year, like the first half of the year compared to the second half, because they don't have legacies. Like, you know, the Wrestle Kingdom is always going to be up there. This Muto show was a legacy show. All-Star Grand Queendom, like, designed to be the biggest show of all time, all happened in the first half of the year. And then the second half, at that point, you're hoping something jumps out from one of the smaller companies, like a DG, DDT type of deal.
Like, something that jumped out is the fans vote number 4, the Fighting Detectives show that Takuya Nomura and Fuminori Abe produced, of course, with the great main event they had there. That's going to be shouted out later on as well. DDT had Ultimate Party that, in my opinion, was a good show, but didn't reach the heights that the two winners of this category had.
Yeah, it was a two-horse race. Like, there were clearly, those were the top two shows, and I think the voting shows it. But for me, I also agree. I think, like, those were clearly the ones I was looking at going in, and it turned into a pretty close vote. You know, like, and they were both worthy, I think, in their own ways, even though they had a lot of different strengths and weaknesses between them that were a little bit different. The Fighting Detective show, Battle Arts is my favorite company ever, so obviously for me seeing that is beautiful, but I can understand why it didn't get as many votes as some of the others. It was a smaller production, but it did get a lot of buzz, especially for the match we'll talk about there. As a show, the main event was really what popped the most, I think, to everybody. As a full show, I don't think it captured, personally, the feel of the old Battle Arts. So I can see why it, like, for me, I mean, yeah, third would probably be accurate for it, but I definitely thought, like, there's a big gap between number 2 and number 3, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really don't have anything to add to that. I have it, yeah, well, I do I have it in reverse order. I put the Tokyo Dome show for Keiji Muto on my number 1 and Dream All-Star Grand Queendom on number 2. That would be my shows of the year. Then another one that I liked was the Big Japan show with Okabayashi and Yuya Aoki in the main event. I thought that was a strong show for Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Other mentions, of course, yes, Sakura Genesis and Dominion were good shows for New Japan Pro Wrestling. All Together Again was a fine get-together, but nothing that blew me away. So, yeah, all together, you know, overall, not a year for strong top-to-bottom shows in Japan.
There really weren't in terms of top-to-bottom shows, but I think that's been, again, these issues are those that have popped up for years and years at this point. I think that in general, the days of top-to-bottom great shows are very rare. And even something like, you know, Last Love, the wrestling itself wasn't the draw of it, more so than the spectacle of it. And I think that's what you look for now. And the same thing like with Wrestle Kingdom this year. The wrestling, to me, was secondary to the spectacle of it that they finally had. They haven't had that at Wrestle Kingdom in a long time for 2024. And I think that that's what you kind of look for your best shows now. What stood out? What meant the most? What had the most spectacle and felt the most important to it? And I think that's where these two shows really stood out. They were clearly the most important shows of the year overall. And I think that's something you're missing now is like top to bottom. And I mean, the Stardom show was a fantastic show, like pretty much top to bottom. Obviously, no show is perfect, but they had 5, 6, 7 matches that were, you know, really strong or at least had good value to them. So I think that in general, though, those kind of shows are very rare that you're top to bottom. I think ultimately that's just how it's going to be. I think in 2024, we'll have a similar conversation about best show. And I think last year we probably had a very similar conversation about last year's best shows as well. So I think that's just the world we live in terms of pro wrestling nowadays.
Absolutely. And with that, we go away from the best show, but a very important category, of course, that also has a strong impact on a strong show is
what was your pick for the best show?
Oh, I said it. My pick was Muto above the Stardom show. I said it. I had it in reverse order, in contrast to what the fans said.
Yeah, I would have the Stardom show the best. And again, like you can't say that Last Love show was a better wrestling show than the Stardom show, but you can say it meant more and had a bigger spectacle to it.
Yep.
You know, overall, and I think that you take everything into account when it comes to that. So like those two were clearly the top two. And I think that Last Love is a fine choice. But to me, the Stardom was just a better top to bottom show, even though really they both kind of, you know, it's interesting how where both companies went after those, their biggest shows in forever.
Yeah, that is true. All right. Yes. Match of the year. The best bout. We had a winner with Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega from Wrestle Kingdom. And then we have the two Nakajima versus Miyahara matches, almost head-to-head. And I think you can really make a case for either match, and you can't go wrong with that. And then the next one is Fuminori Abe versus Takuya Nomura from the Fighting Detective show we mentioned. For me, this year there hasn't changed much in comparison to the first half year. The one match that fell out of my top four, of my top three, was Omega versus Osprey, because Fuminori Abe versus Takuya Nomura happened, and that is the match I loved so much. I loved the independent spirit of these two booking a show just for the sake of them having a wrestling clinic in the main event of that match, wrestling in the idea of battle arts, booking a show in the idea of battle arts. This one felt like a true professional wrestling struggle and a true professional wrestling fight, in contrast to some matches that we see this day and age where it feels overly choreographed. This match felt like everything they did mattered, and every hold they took, every moment they were on top, was a complete struggle for either guy. And that, for me, cemented this match to be my number two match of the year. My number three match of the year, I recently rewatched. This morning before we did the show, I watched Yuji Kobayashi versus Yuya Aoki again from Endless Survivor. This was the match that solidified Yuya Aoki as the top talent, as the top guy in Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Felt like a true passing of the torch moment, defeating the almost undefeatable big champion Okabayashi. Yuya Aoki, with his mouth bloodied up, had such a great fighting spirit in the end, in the final moments of the match, that was so captivating. That's my number three match of the year. And ultimately, I went with the July match between Kento Miyahara versus Katsuhiko Nakajima as my match of the year, as my representation for Kento Miyahara versus Katsuhiko Nakajima, because of the raw, unprecedented nature of the match that they produced here. We went into this match really not knowing what to expect from these two in the main event position, and I thought that they delivered a match where you could really feel the excitement in the air, where you could feel the real nature of this struggle between the two. That really, in my opinion, was an outstanding moment. And the other match at the end of the year was outstanding as well for different reasons, though. The first one for me was from the entire environment that it was presented in front of. Currican Hall had to add more seats to it. It was an incredible spectacle in July. So that's why I went with Miyahara and Nakajima for my top match of the year.
Interesting. You'd picked Omega and Osprey as your number one at the Half Year Awards, mm-hmm. and now flipped to Aoki and Okabayashi above it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I rewatched it again, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. And I always say that, like, to me, the truly great matches have to be the ones that last with you overall. Like, I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, I mean, Omega Osprey won the Half Year Awards. We both voted for that. And
there is nothing wrong with that either. So it's a complete fine vote. And probably, I think it is a lock for example, the Voices of Wrestling match of the year.
Yeah, probably. And it won ours too. So, in there. So, I think what we saw was kind of what I thought would happen. I didn't predict this, but I did think it might happen this way. If the December 31st match
mm-hmm.
hadn't have happened,
yeah,
I think that the first match could have won. Like, I think they split each other's votes. I think a lot of people that voted for the December match would have voted for the July match if the mm-hmm. December match hadn't have happened. And it was pretty close. Again, like the first half of the year, Osprey and Omega ran away with it. This year, it was a much closer. You had both Nakajima Miyahara matches and the Abe and Nomura matches like really get within 10 votes of the leader, which is a great showing, especially for Abe and Nomura. That made such a great impact on everybody. And again, good pick, too. I agree with you about the July match being I said this on the last show. That had more impact to me than the December one for the reason I said there. So I agree with that. Best bout overall, I think it's tough. I would also like to throw an honorable mention towards Sari and Arisa Nakajima, which got a few votes here from August in the Seedling Anniversary Show. It was really just a great match. The best Joshi match of the year to me. Sari was just a great shot in the arm to the Joshi scene, and Nakajima is like always great. So you can get that there. We had a lot of different votes for a lot of different matches. A lot of things stood in, but those four that we said were the top four, that really stood out above the rest. So I would go with the July Nakajima Miyahara match as well. I think Osprey and Omega still, especially, I think I would have gone with the Kento and Nakajima match at first, but then, when we watched Wrestle Kingdom last week, that's kind of what I felt afterwards, that like none of this compares to what happened last year. And I think that kind of pushed it over the top for me. So it's really close. Like, no issue at all with anybody voting for the Nakajima versus Miyahara matches. But I think in the end, I'm going to have to go with the boring vote here. Like, Osprey and Omega. If I'm being honest about it, I think that's the one that captured what they wanted to do the best, overall of any match that you could have had. And Abe and Nomura, it's tough for me personally because I'm comparing it to Battle Arts now, and it didn't live up to it, in my opinion, by that standard. Like, if you compare it to the original Battle Arts, if you compare it to stuff now, yeah, it was like almost all, it was totally unique, and it was a great match on its own if you just judge it by itself.
Yep.
But if I compare it to Ishikawa, stuff, then I don't think it fully captured what they were going for, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. That may be an unfair standard by you, Dylan, but I get where you're coming
from. And it may be.
Because
totally accept that.
In this current landscape, this definitely was something completely unique, and it made an incredible impact. Yeah.
And it stood out, and it was a great match, and like they're great wrestlers on their own. Sure. I just think when you tell me you're doing a Fighting Detectives Battle Arts tribute show, pretty much, with this, that's what I'm comparing you to at the end of the day. And like you said, maybe it's not fair. A lot of people probably don't even care about the original Battle Arts that much. Like, a lot of people that watched it. So they don't even have that standard to compare it to. So it's not like it really matters that much. But I'm talking for myself, not the people at the end of the day.
Sure,
the people,
sure.
And it's still a great match. Like, if you look at the top 10 of the year, whatever, that would be on it. But just for number one, I would put the others ahead of
me. And that's why I ultimately went with Okabayashi and Aoki with my number three, because I'm talking for me. Objectively, the Omega versus Osprey match was better and had a better success rate than the Okabayashi Aoki match, of course. But you know, of course, a little bit of subjective note has to be considered here in this awards, and that's what we have the listeners' votes for, to have the most objective vote that we can get.
Aoki and Okabayashi was an incredible match. You know, that was a great match overall. You know, that was up there. Again, I'm surprised it didn't get more votes, honestly, for the year end. I thought that was going to be a contender, or at least up there, but it got surpassed by a couple others. But it was a great match. I would put that above the Abe and Nomura match, actually, myself. You know, I thought that was a fantastic match, and a great crowning for Aoki, and a great swan song for Okabayashi for now.
Yes. One more match I want to mention, because I raved about it when it happened. It is the match from the Kyushu Pro Anniversary Show, the three-way match.
Yeah, the true three-way,
Exactly. Kodai Nosaki versus Genkai versus Mentai Kid. Without question, the best three-way match I've ever seen on Japanese soil. Complete success in putting over Kodai Nosaki as the big monster champion. Great three-way spots throughout the match. Genkai and Mentai Kid worked incredibly hard to make this happen with Nosaki. Nosaki has been a great champion since. That's free on YouTube. Check that out. It is from the anniversary show from August 6th.
Yeah, it was really cool. You know, Kyushu Pro is a really interesting company. Very easy to watch for foreigners. Always doing a lot of different things there. They have a lot of guys I like as well. Among the indie companies, I think they're the best. And you got to see the talent they had in the main event of that match. The Triple Threat was a really strong match for sure. You know, like I said, I wouldn't put that in my top matches, but it was well worth watching, and a great statement from a smaller company like that. A really small company, actually, like that. Mm-hmm. And they did a great job.
Yeah, but they did a great house for this anniversary show. I think they got 4,000 fans in the attendance. So it's not like they are really that small. I mean, they are small company.
They are small
from the roster size, you know. But they always do good houses.
Yeah, that's great. They're even indie isn't necessarily true. It's more like a local. Great Sasuke used to say. Yeah, great Sasuke used to say about Michinoku Pro. It's not indie; it's a regional company out there, and he'd get mad if you say it's indie. So I will give Kyushu Pro the respect of being a regional company and a successful one. They're a good company. They're really fun to watch. If you have time, make time for them, because they have a lot of really good guys like Sasaki, you know, Mentai Kid. All those guys are good.
Yes, they truly are. Good. This brings us to the Kawada Tawe Best Tag Team Award. And it wasn't close, after all. Takuya Nomura and Fuminori Abe ran away with the Best Tag Team Award. The Astronauts won this one. It was a little bit closer between the second and third place for the listeners. Kento Miyahara and Yuma Oyagi won above Bishamon, Yoshihashi and Hiroki Goto. And when I'm looking at my sheet, I have it in the exact same order, so I can't add anything to the listeners, Dylan.
Yeah, I think those were the top three teams that you would look at. Depends on the order. I went with Kento and Yuma as my number one. I swapped one and two on that one if I were to make a vote. I think that their matches were bigger. They had more success to them, and the match quality was not that different. I think Astronauts had more, but Business Tag had bigger. Coming in there, and Bishamon, I kind of made the argument for them that if you put them in the position of an Astronauts or Kento and Yuma, they would have all the same, they were just as good talent wise, but they're not given the same opportunities. So I think their resume is lesser than the other two, but they're still a great team who deserve a lot of credit. But it's more so where they're at than anything wrong with their output, or they would be up there. But I would put Astronauts and Kento and Yuma is a very close one and two. You could go either way, and Bishamon would be a third.
Ultimately, what swayed me into the direction of the Astronauts was the final match of the year, where they lost the tag title to Takeda and Tsukamoto. I thought that was an absolutely outstanding tag match to close out Big Japan's year and to close out that title run. And that's what put it over the edge for me. Yeah,
no, absolutely. Astronauts were a great pick. I think there's a reason they won by so much as well.
Yeah, they are just immensely popular, and they are each year. They've been a great pick for each year that we've been doing this award, and it's crazy what kind of a legacy they have built in the minds of Japanese wrestling fans already.
We may be seeing them next year, right this time as well, for 2024. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they repeat again.
Jesus, we should have put that on our prediction show. Astronauts win Tag Team of the Year.
Yeah, I think that would have been a safe bet. That would have been a one. I think unlikely.
Yes. Not going out on a limb in any way. Yeah, let's see if anyone goes out on a limb for the Yushin Thunder Liger Best Junior Heavyweight Award. Dylan, the listeners gave this to Fuminori Abe with almost 25%. It's the second award for Fuminori Abe in this in our awards. Second place goes to Hiromu Takahashi. Third place to El Desperado. Do you have any of these as well?
Doubled up for Abe. Love it. In the half year awards, it was listed as junior MVP, and I argued against Abe on the basis that he wrestles heavyweights more than juniors a lot of the time. With the executive decision we made to change it to best junior, yes, for the Liger Award, I have no qualms about voting for Abe. So to me, yes, the best junior was Abe. Like, to
there
me,
is
I
no
vote
question
for him, number one. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely no question. This guy is an absolutely outstanding wrestler. Whenever you see him against any kind of opponent, you mentioned it, he wrestles heavyweights for the most part. When he is in match number one on the card, wrestling a rookie, he puts out an incredible performance to make the rookie look great, and to have him wrapped in his holds and to make him still look good by that. If he's in match number two, if he's in a comedy match, he excels in these comedy matches. If he's in the main event, he will do great business with a guy like Takuya Nomura, like we said. You can put this guy on any position of the card and he will be one of the best wrestlers. It's absolutely astounding. For me, number two, my personal take here is El Desperado. He, in the end, at the beginning of the year, of course, he won the Junior Heavyweight Championship. I liked most of what he did in 2023. And number three for me from All Japan Pro Wrestling is Rising Hayato. Even though he did not win the Junior Heavyweight title, I came away thinking that he, you point that out a lot, that he is probably their best junior heavyweight they have in the company, both from the wrestling part and from the gimmick part.
Yeah, like the best all-around guy. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe not the best wrestler, but he has more character than the other juniors. He would be my number two. Number three, I went with Hiromu. Like, as lame as his second half was, you can't deny he had a great first half to me, and I thought that was more impressive than Desperado's. The thing is, any New Japan Junior is always going to be like in a tough spot for this award, because the second half of the year, by default, you are going to be a bench player. Like, you know, like you're never going to be able to do that. And both men tried to stake it out on their own, working these indie companies. Desperado probably had a better run than Hiromu, but it wasn't as good as Abe's, like whatever he was doing, you know, at the end of the day. So I think it's tough to go against Abe for this one. Some of the other ones you have on here.
Atsugi Aoyagi, Master Wato, Titan.
Yeah. Titan was like a late game player for this. Like, he came in with like 3 votes on the last 10 votes we got.
Oh, okay.
a lot of people like rounded up for him at the end, which he deserves a lot of credit for his best of the Super Junior run. Outside of that, I think like his best stuff was in Mexico more than Japan. Doi, he's another one, had a great first half of the year, kind of wrestling all over the place. Hayato, love him. I wish that he could wrestle more and do bigger things as well. Yeah.
The Hiromu Takahashi match, I thought, was good, not outstanding. And that's just the thing. He couldn't wrestle so much, and that's why I couldn't really put him in any boat.
Yeah, he's great. Like, no doubt about it. If he could wrestle as much as Abe, he'd be up there. But that's just not the case right now, unfortunately. The others were all interesting. What about Hirata?
I was just going to say, I'm surprised that he got so few votes. Because I think that 2023 really was a career year for him. That they finally accepted him as a standalone player to be a draw for the bigger shows. I would have thought that he could have had a shot to make it to like place 4 or 5.
Yeah, I think DDT comedy wrestling is always like, why would you pick him when you could pick Abe? Like, as a
that's right. That is right.
Yeah, you know, like, Hirata is cool, but like, come on now. Like, for the best junior of the year, we have to be realistic.
I can't argue that point.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys, that's kind of how I feel. But I think you could argue for them if you didn't see Abe at all. I think like if he just was under your radar, you only watched like the big companies, then I could see it. Because really, Abe's run, the biggest company he had was All Japan. Mm. And he didn't blow the roof off during the junior tournaments. And no. He wasn't able to. Like, it was the tournament's problem. It wasn't his fault. Like, you know, with the 10-minute time limits always on the undercard, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but he does. Yeah, and that's maybe that also goes to the next award, too.
But Abe won anyway, even despite that, even though with the smaller companies, he still exactly. beat all the New Japan guys. So he deserved it.
And he doesn't even have a profile as the biggest singles wrestler amongst them all, because he's used much more in tag team roles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you have anything else? Anyone else to add? Or anyone else you want to discuss with the juniors?
No, I mean, I think the other ones, I wouldn't really put any of the others up to even think about personally, with all due respect to them. And then we've got a lot of interesting guys and some good wrestlers, don't get me wrong. But I don't think their years would be compared to the top people.
Mm. I can't, for example, you mentioned Titan, best stuff in Mexico. He was in for a couple of tours, of course. But you can't really, I can't really put a case out for someone like Mike Bailey or for Leo Rush. They only were in for one tour and one match in October that Leo Rush was out for, even. And so I can't.
Leo had a match in March, which was a great match versus
exactly.
Hiromu.
Exactly. Yes, yes, right? Yes. Yeah. That's true. Those were individual performances in some parts of the year.
Yeah.
Even though you said it by default, the second half of the year doesn't really take place. Still, though, there is a full year of other junior heavyweight wrestling that you've seen, except for those.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, that's why the New Japan guys are always behind the eight ball. It's not a positive; it's a negative. They're on the bench. Yeah.
That's right.
What about Kushida?
Did he get a vote?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put him in any category, actually.
We had
not any of the categories that we have. I would give any vote for him.
Strong words from Stringer right now. I'm Kushida.
Would you?
No, of course not.
Strong words from Dylan.
Well, I'm agreeing with your strong words, so I guess that makes me an accomplice. Yes. Accomplice to that. We had Kosei Fujita got a vote. Indakara got a vote. Balyanaki, Colum Newman. But he just came in at the end of the year on top of it. He didn't even have a full year. Kaito Ishida, that's a good underrated vote. To me, his title run was short, but it was really good.
He wasn't.
Yeah, Lindemann. I've had my. He's been kind of iffy for me this year, to be honest.
Yeah.
Drilla Maloney. He found himself. He improved as the year went along, but I wouldn't put his best stuff up against Abe's.
No.
And Kikuta, who's still not a junior.
Yeah. I'm interested to see where Kosei Fujita lands next year's at this point. Depends on if they really do anything with the guy this year. I mean, from the wrestling point, he sure has it in him. But will he get a great run? That's the question.
I think he'll at least get a spot in the tournament, and he can maybe show off some stuff there. But again, like the New Japan guys, no matter who it is, I think is going to struggle for like an award like this. When you if you really look at the whole year, that to me really makes me not want to vote for any New Japan guy when you compare it to guys who have wrestled all year, you know, overall. Like, it had great matches, like, the whole time. It'd been a great wrestler the whole time. I think it's tough. Like, even compared to the All Japan guys, I think they had more complete years than the New Japan guys.
Yeah, agreed. Let us then go to the Hiroshi Tanahashi Trophy for the best overall wrestler in Japan. Dylan. Make the start, please.
Yeah, you look at the votes here. There was so much going on. There were so many different votes from a variety of impacts. You know, like, and some people from other awards even getting to cross over to this. But in terms of those who got more than one vote. You had Zack Sabre Jr., Tetsuya Naito, Yuma Aoyagi, and Chihiro Hashimoto, all have two. Aoyagi jumped ahead of them. Sorry about that. It was Naito and Zack all tied. Yeah. Sari got four votes. Aoyagi got six. Abe got seven. So he not only got votes for the best junior, but also the best overall wrestler. Okada came in at 9. And Nakajima just ahead of him at 10, which I thought was an interesting pick there. The top two, though, it was pretty close, like within 10 votes of each other. Kento Miyahara, second place, and then Will Ospreay, number one, gets not just the best foreign wrestler, but the best in-ring performer of Japan in 2023.
Yeah, what do you say?
We kind of talked about that earlier. Like, my issue with him... And like, if you look at the peaks and even the quantity, like, because he wasn't here all year, but if you look at the quantity, if you look at his cage match guide, he's got like 17, 18, 19, 20 matches above 7 or 8, you know, for this year, which would be up there with anybody else. But I don't, it doesn't appeal to me that somebody's not there all year at the end of the day. You know, like that, I will usually go for others at that, you know, at that station.
Yeah,
but I do think he's worth a mention. Like he deserves to win. Just for me, I would pick, when you look at the overall year, and I think compared to everybody that he'll go to, and this is just the in-ring. This doesn't count importance or titles or any of that stuff. This is only about your wrestling.
Yeah.
I think the most complete run, which had the consistency and the peaks, because he was up there, we talked about him in Match of the Year, I would go with Kento as my pick.
I also have Kento. That is, when you look at his year, started with the amazing match with Takuya Nomura. He then had the title defense against Yuma Aoyagi, which was also great. The match with Nagata was great. Good run in the Champion Carnival. The great, great match with Katsuki Nakajima in July stands at 9.41. Then in October, the match with Aoyagi, 9.03. The final match on December 31st, 9.33. Plus the tag team run with Yuma Aoyagi. I agree with you. This is a complete run for someone that, deservingly so, in my opinion, would be called Hiroshi Tanahashi Trophy winner.
Absolutely. I think Aoyagi is also close. The problem is he doesn't have the Nakajima matches that Kento had. His match was really good with Nakajima. Don't get me wrong. That was a great match on its own. But it just didn't have what the Nakajima matches with Kento had. Just a bit short, in my opinion. So I would go with Kento as the in-ring best wrestler. I also think that, again, if you look at his resume, I think if you just judge it by match guide, cage match ratings, match quality, I don't think he would have the same... like depth that maybe an Ospreay or somebody would have. I think Ishii, though, if you look at his year, it wasn't up there in terms of the match of the year candidates, but look at his run in the G1. He was facing a lot of guys who were kind of unproven, not having a lot of great matches besides him. He was having everybody's best match. Well, you know, in there, Kingston, I thought, like, stood out as one of the best matches of the tournament, and Kingston didn't really impress me, or any of us, I think, with the G1. And his match was great. Him and Nichols was amazing. Great match. Him and Hanare, banger match. He was having great matches with everybody. Finlay in the New Japan Cup, like, he had one of his best matches. And I'm sorry, and I think, like, you know, the thing with Ishii is if you put him in these other guys' roles and gave him all the opportunities that they had, I think they would do great. I think he would do as great as they were, maybe even better. But I think if you put them in a tag team with Toru Yano, none of them would have a 4.5-star match. Like, that's impossible, except for him, which he did. And I think, like, until that happens, he's the best wrestler. But the resume doesn't coincide with that because he didn't have the opportunities, unfortunately. But I think if you look at just his wrestling, it was really as strong as ever, maybe even stronger than usual, because he was facing a lot of weaker competition and getting the most out of them and bringing the best out of everybody he wrestled, which I don't know if you could say the same for everybody on this list.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. I'm looking at Katsuhiko Nakajima, got a lot of votes as well. You mentioned that. And I
thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting because I wouldn't put him out there.
No, me either.
He did not have an outstanding run in the N1 victory. The outstanding stuff happened only at the beginning of November until now. He didn't have anything outstanding before that in 2023. We had the match with Shingo Takagi that was very good in January. What else?
The Jake Lee match? You're looking at a handful of matches for his year, like less than 10 that you could really stake your hat on overall. And I just don't think the depth is there. A lot of that is Noah's fault and the opportunities. If he stays in All Japan for longer, maybe he might be able to have that big run. But for I agree with you for 2020.
I think you could make much more of a case for Yuya Oki in Big Japan Pro Wrestling.
He's another one. Yeah, he's another one. Like, he didn't have the... Because that's the thing, even with Kento... All of his best matches, Nakajima, Aoyagi's involved, like all of these great workers that he's in the ring with, he's not really, outside of the Saito Brothers match, which I think is a big tip in both of their caps, like Kento and Yuma's, he's really usually always against great workers, like, around him and getting them out. I don't think he had, like, somebody like Aoki made the best of a situation that, he's not facing the level of guys that Kento is.
He had matches after the Okabayashi match. He had matches against Ryota Hama, Yasufumi Nakanoya, Hideyoshi Kamitani, Daisuke Sekimoto. Of course, Sekimoto, great wrestler. He's old, though, by this point. But all of these matches, I wouldn't say all of these matches were standout matches, but all of these matches had their qualities to it. And Yuya Aoki made the matches work for him and for his opponents.
And he got the most out of those opponents. Like, somebody like Ahama, he was able to get the most out of and make it work in a way that deserves a lot of respect. So it's one of those interesting things. But I think people will always lean towards, like, if you're doing research for this kind of award, I think everybody will look at the match guide, and see what matches they had. But if you look at the actual, like, pure in-ring skill that some of these guys shown, I think somebody like an Aoki has a great case. And Ishii as well, I think, are both of those guys were underrated. They deserve some votes, in my opinion.
Yeah, so overall, my top places were Kento Miyahara, then Fuminori Abe, and Yuya Aoki. That's my top three. And the Osprey vote, of course, much like you said, we discussed that with the Best Foreigner Award already. So that is something that we took, that really, really look out for.
Yeah, and he had more matches than you might think on paper, because it just feels like he was there for a couple of months out of the year. But like I said, if you still look at him, he still probably had 10, 15, 20 matches that were up there that were and the top peaks were like match of the year level. So I understand it, but I would still go with Kento.
Interesting, though, is we said it specifically, the Hiroshi Tanahashi trophy can also be won by a female wrestler, but no female wrestler really got any big votes behind them. The biggest is probably Sari, right? Sari got the most votes for the women. Shiro Hashimoto got some.
Sari was the best wrestler in Japan, the Joshis.
I would agree, yeah.
And it was a down year, like I said, for the whole scene. Like, it was a really down year. Like, Stardom is the one, because they're the biggest, they get talked about. But every company had a down year, like, when it comes to the Joshi scene. In match quality, business, whatever you want to say, it wasn't a good year for the Joshi scene in 2023 at all. And you can see that reflected in these votes. The amount of big matches just weren't there compared to how it used to be.
Do you see that the scene could have a better year, 2024?
You have hopes that Stardom can. Tokyo Joshi Pro, I mean, they had a great start to the year.
They did.
But a lot of guys, like, Wave at the start of last year had a great show on January 1st. Mm-hmm. A lot of these companies can start off strong for a whole year, what they're setting up. I mean, it doesn't look great right now, in my opinion. I think that we'd have to see some people step up and some accessibility step up as well for like the Sendai girls. You can barely see Seahosh wrestle a lot of the times. Override, they're just small. Like, these are small companies at the end of the day. We have to recognize that and be fair about that.
And for the most part, these companies use the same crop of talent. Look at Seed Ring, look at Sendai girls, look at Wave.
Yeah, there's people going back and forth to all of them, pretty much there. And they're trying to do some different things. I mean, we'll see how it goes. Like, somebody like Mio Momono, she looked great at the first half of the year. That's the thing with Ozaki happened. A lot of people got turned off by that. you know, but she's a great worker. There's a lot of great talent. They just need some maybe better support from the companies themselves overall. And we'll see if that comes to pass. Even Stardom, like I said, even the top company had a pretty down year overall by their standards. But so far, things have started off well. It remains to be seen if they'll carry that along. Like I said, even Tokyo Joshi Pro, they set up Watanabe going for the title, their big show. They have a tournament. Maybe they'll do something good with the tag titles. We'll see what happens overall. But right now, I will say that I'm not fully convinced that things are going in a better way. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful, but not confident.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, this brings us to the best moment. And when I'm looking at that, what we have in different ways that it was phrased here, we still go with Muto versus Chono, much like in the half year. And also Kaito versus Okada, the brawl, still is up there. A great moment that was also called out by the listeners was Nakajima with the flowers arriving in All Japan Pro Wrestling. And also Nakajima's entrance as Inoki. It was more like he wasn't Inoki, he was Katsuyuki Fujita more than he was Inoki.
Yeah, that's a good point as well.
And the Saki Akai retirement received some votes. And from these, I do have the Saki Akai retirement ceremony on my number 3. I thought it was a very emotional ceremony. And I would also add the match and the finish of the match to that. When everybody left the ring to leave it to Mio Yamashita and to Saki Akai, that was a very poetic ending to her career. That was amazing. Diamante losing his mask at Kobe World, in my opinion, was a very emotional moment. But also, I agree with the listeners, the Muto versus Chono one more time thing at the big Tokyo Dome stage. I think that's an unmatched moment.
Yeah, that was my winner as well. I agree with the listeners. I'm glad it won. It was the perfect end to his career. Just a great, lighthearted, fun moment with his you know, like greatest rival and friend. Just to do it was so wholesome and great. There were different aspects of stuff too, like you said, with Nakajima. You had like 3 or 4 different Nakajima moments nominated in different ways. But to me, Saki's retirement was my number 2 as well. Again, such a wholesome deal to have so much into it. DDT like totally killed it with the retirement ceremony. Yeah. And on top of it, the build-up to it, which had taken place, her retirement tour that led to that moment was the best. Because a lot of these other moments really were like spontaneous. That was something that I built and built to. And it led to this amazing thing. Like it culminated in this amazing thing that was even bigger than anybody could have expected. I also thought Diamante's unmasking was great as well, like very emotional, like you said. Even though, like, I was, you know, a lot of what made that was the heel antics of Shun during the match as well, which led to that added so much more. Ultimo coming out was really cool, and all of that. I think Brooks, when he won the title and jumped into the crowd, I'm a big sucker for like super fan interactive moments like that. And I thought that was one of the best ones where it was so real, like, you know, like this was for the fans type of deal. I thought it was like perfectly done and expertly done by Brooks there. So that would be in my number 3. Number 2 would be Saki's. And then the main one, the number 1 vote would be definitely Muto and Shono's match, quote unquote, at the end of the last love show.
Let's stress it again that the New Japan Legends created your got this moment paid for by Pro Wrestling Noah.
That's true. I mean, hey, it was the most attended show of the year, though, so you have to give it up to him for that. But yeah, like you said, it was on the Noah show, based all around New Japan guys there. Amazing. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was interesting how Micah's red belt win was higher than the cage. Like the red belt win got more votes than the cage one, which that's what everybody pointed to, like among the Stardom fans.
Recency bias in some cases is
probably you're right. Yeah, you're
that's
totally
the thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing which we talked about it with Nakajima. Recency bias.
I don't disagree, though. I thought that they made the red belt win feel like a big moment. It was cool. Like, it was great and all, the cage deal. I wasn't as high on that as a lot of the Stardom fans.
Me neither.
To be honest. I thought the red belt had way more, like they made it feel bigger. And I like the cage, don't get me wrong. That's a great match. And I thought the moment was cool. Like, it was great that they reconciled. But I don't think it hit the same way as Micah winning the red belt. But I was surprised by it because I think all the Stardom fans I know always love the cage and love that moment. But I was interested how that turned out to be the Micah thing. Like you said, maybe recency bias. But there were a lot of great moments picked here. I remember all this stuff I'm reading listed. And they all were really good in their own ways, pretty much. Even something like, you know, again, another Stardom one. Like Waka winning her first match over Nanai Takahashi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a big build-up moment, yeah.
Yeah, that was an epic deal. The Axis reunion. At the time, that felt like a huge thing. Obviously, that didn't really go too far. But the moment itself of them reuniting was like a great thing that happened. You had Tom winning the red belt as well in the biggest match, which that, again... I disagree with the decision, but they made it feel like a big moment when it happened, for sure. Ueno, that was really well done, too. When he won the title, Takeshita, like, patted him on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
That was very good. Look at all these great moments we have to pick from. This is my favorite category.
I'm just
personally
looking for the moment, but I'm not seeing it here.
What is it?
I thought that the G1 final was a great moment. It was the Naito and Okada match, and I thought the atmosphere in Sumo Hall was so special and so unique for this match.
Yeah,
because everybody knew, okay, this is the match, and they had to know that this, of course, wasn't the final one. We would be getting this match at least one more time for the title, but for the final of the G1, this was the perfect match to choose, and the crowd was completely in for it.
Red and that's another one. Another story of the year was the tournaments. The whole tournament was really flat a lot of times. And then the final came, and you had a great number for the show. Everyone bought into Naito and Okada. And that was like a spectacle. Like, that was one of those true spectacle matches where the crowd just were totally locked in, just like you said, in a way they really hadn't been. And Naito coming off the great match with Ospreay in the semifinals as well had a lot of buzz. So, like, that was a great moment. I'm surprised that didn't get any votes. You're right.
Yeah, me too. What got a vote was Titan getting to the BOSJ final over Hiromu Takahashi. That was a great moment, I thought.
Oh, that was a stunner. Like, that was one of the more surprising moments of the year. And I love Titan. Like, I've always loved him in CMLL. To see him get this success was unbelievable. Like, I would have never predicted it at all going into the tournament. I would have thought, if you had told me Titan's going to the finals, I'd have been like, you're crazy. That's never going to happen. And then they did it. And it was awesome. And, I mean, that final, that's another one for best bout. Titan and Wato was an amazing match. But it kind of gets lost in the shuffle, like, sometimes. Maybe, again, by that recency bias. And that's another thing that makes it so impressive, that the match from January 4th won, because it had to last all year to get that way, which is always one of the hardest things. I don't think any of the matches from Wrestle Kingdom this year will win, like, for 2024.
Hmm.
I don't know if I vote for him now.
Fujita Hayato on stage?
Well, that's a moment. I'm talking about match.
Oh, match. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great moment, but I'm talking about a match. I don't think any of these matches from Wrestle Kingdom would win this year.
I don't.
And I'm saying that's, moments one thing. Moments can last, but full matches, I think that's really tough. Like, when you start off at you get a January big match, I think that's really hard to last over the whole course of the year and be the best match. So we'll see. Like, I mean, again, it's not guaranteed. Like I said, I'm not sure. Certain I'd vote for a Wrestle Kingdom match of the year right now. like two weeks in at the moment. You had the Tokyo Joshi Pro match, and Shuri and Mayu are both up there too. So we'll see. But I just think it's impressive that we have all these moments here. Like I said, this is my favorite category because these are all really cool, great things that we all got to witness together. That's really
absolutely cool. Now we're getting to the real big meat of the show with the two top categories, first of which is the Manami Toyota Trophy for the Yoshi MVP, clear winner with Julia, followed by Sari and by Tam Nakano, who by a small margin defeated Mio Yamashita, who landed on number 4. Interesting is Mayu Iwatani, only on number 5. Dylan, Julia, I would say she's a no-brainer.
She was not in my top 3, personally, so I disagree with you and the voters here. Nothing against Julia. This is her booking that caused this. When you look at it, if we had started the first half of the year, yes. I think since then, if you look at her title reign, she's had with a strong title, she's kind of been 50-50, honestly. Like, a lot of her matches, I thought the Risa Sarah match was atrocious. Like, one of the worst matches I've ever seen her have that we had for the title defense. The Yu match was very disappointing. Like, I was very hyped for that, and it was good. But, it wasn't even that good. It was, like, solid. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good either. Then you had the end of the year, she started to pick it up again against Azumi and Megan Bain. She really turned it up. But then you had the moment with the artist titles, which was cool and all, but not as transcendent as the 3 that I would say I would have on there. And here's the thing, it's not just Julia. I don't think any Stardom person has a credible case for this, unless you count my pick, which only had one vote. But if you look at her year, I think Anno has the best overall resume, starting out as the Ice Ribbon champion. Had a great match with Totoro Satsuki, and I love Totoro, but I think it's like to have a match that quality is very rare with her. And Sariano got the best out of her. Her artist title reign, I thought, was way like with Restart and Natsupoi and Kairi, that title reign was way better than Donna Del Mondo's artist title reign. In my opinion, I thought they were a lot better, and she was the star of the team, actually, like in a lot of ways. Then you had her singles run. She was arguably one of the best people in the tournament, having a match against Julia, which is one of the best of the tournament, and then really going on and having a complete run throughout the 5-star. She had 2 great matches. The tag team with Natsupoi got the titles and unfortunately had to end early due to Poi's injury. But she was great in both of their title defenses as well, and her win. Then the singles matches with Mirai were both very good. I thought was the best match on the year-end show for Stardom was their match, and she actually won the title at the end. So she had accomplishments, she had titles, she meant a lot to the scene. I think Anno is the pick for MVP. I don't think Julia made that much of an impact for Stardom because she wasn't allowed to, because she was slotted how she was.
I was going to ask you, Dylan, are you making a pick for an MVP, or are you making an in-ring pick? Because most of the arguments that you made is more of an in-ring wrestling pick.
But she was important to, like, look at her as the champion in Ice Ribbon earlier in the year. She really got Totoro Suzuki's reign going. She helped Kairi along, helped make the tag team title stronger with Natsupoi. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the injury cut it short. And then ended the year with a white belt win. So she wasn't the top champion.
Yep.
But neither was Julia for most of the year.
For most of the year, no. For Julia, though, I think it's just she is the most talked about and focused woman whenever someone brings up Stardom. And for Stardom, she is she's that woman that gets the most attention for everything, for anything that they do. Not on the top of the promotion, but she still had the run with the strong title. Quality-wise, you can definitely say that isn't the best run. But still, though, it is always an important match on the cards.
I think it's a stretch to call it important. I think it's a mid-card role that she was slotted in, unfortunately. She should have been the MVP. She should have been higher. Yes, but she wasn't. If you were going to pick somebody with Stardom, you would think it would have to be Nakano. She was the red belt champion and the double champion at some point as well. But her reign wasn't very good. So
her reign wasn't, and she missed most of the year. Not most of the year, but
she did miss most of the year. That's wrong.
Some portion of the year.
Not enough to change. Like, if she had had a good title reign, it would be the MVP, clearly. But to me, her title reign wasn't that successful. And like, the thing is, it's a shame because, again, if you look at Nakano's matches, they're all really good. Like, she's a great worker, but things went way down with her as the champion, and Julia wasn't even in a position to be a main event draw or anything like that this year. So I'm a little puzzled but I think what you said is ultimately true. She's the one that people talk about and know. Yep. Like, she has the most name value.
That's why I said it's a no-brainer. If you look at it, if you make more of a research like you probably did on this award, you may end up with Saoriano. Saoriano, though, that's Ice Ribbon after all, and Ice Ribbon is just not a company that gets focused upon a lot.
Right, that was the first 3 months. The rest of the year was with Stardom.
Yep, that's true. That's true. In my top three, I do have two others. I have Sari on number two, because when she came back, she made immediate impact to the scene, not only with her own booked shows, but also with the shows that she was on. I thought every show she was on got a quality boost, and every show that she was on also got a boost when it comes to attention that was put up on it. That's definitely on her. And number three for me, Mio Yamashita for TJPW. She was in the U.S. Independence in the summer a lot. The beginning of the year, though, she won the Futariwa Princess Tag Team Tournament with Maki Ito and won the Princess Tag title. And at the end of the year, she finished the year as Princess of Princess Champion, once again reclaiming her position as the most important woman on this roster.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, you know, ideally it should have, again, like kind of like Tom with Tokyo Joshi Pro, like Mizuki should have been that person. Like, she was built to be the top star.
She's not, though.
Exactly. Like, her title reign wasn't successful, ultimately, even though she's a fine worker. Like, nothing wrong with her as a wrestler. It just, you know, we have to be honest at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yamashita, too much time in America, in my opinion. Like, the last 3 months she came through with the big match, but I don't look at her as that. I don't think, and I think this is the problem with this award coming into it. There really aren't any great candidates. Like, like last year you had Shuri right there that you could easily, like everything made sense for her. She was a great worker, top draw, had the biggest show ever for Stardom. Like, all of those awards made it easy for her. This year there really is no great candidate overall. You have to look at everything really deep to get in there, or you're just going to say Julia because she has the biggest name at the end of the day, which, because it's the easiest. And I think there's just not any great candidates up and down. I also think Nakajima deserves a lot of love, but she's another one where it's like, if she wrestled more, she could be that top person overall. But, you know, in Seed Ring, it wasn't, you know, the company's far from booming at the moment. She's like the glue that keeps the ship afloat than anything else. Like, without her, the company would probably collapse, like, in all honesty, which it may collapse anyway, regardless, as, you know, things go along. Sari, great pick. She was my number two as well. The wrestling was great. On an indie level, of course, not attracting big houses, but her matches ruled. Like, she was the best worker. I wouldn't say it's tough because she did make a difference in a lot of ways to the scene overall, but it's at a smaller level, so it's kind of tough for her. But she deserves it. Like, her getting a vote is worthy. I would put her over Julia easy in my book.
Yep, you made your case for that. That's definitely. I see your point. I do see your point.
But I'm not the be all end all. The fans voted for Julia, and I respect it. And the thing is, Julia, I wish it was so. Like, I wish all of this happened. It was one of the worst decisions to me to take the title off of her. And who knows where she'll go in 2024. But, I mean, she's a great talent. Like, amazing worker. One of my favorites. Like, honestly. Like I said, if it were up to me and I was the head chief of Stardom or whatever position they have back there, she would be the red belt champion all year. We would have had a great year. But, unfortunately, it didn't happen.
Did not. Yeah, so the final category is the Kenta Kobashi MVP, who was the most valuable to their promotion, thus absolutely essential. The listeners went with Kento Miyahara, 30% of the votes for him. Kenno is on number two, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, he is.
Yes.
Slightly above Yuma Aoyagi, and then we have a big gap to the next Tetsu Naito.
Yeah, I'll just say it is, yeah, Naito, Osprey, Nakajima, Okada, Brooks, Higuchi, Abe, and Nakano all had more than one vote.
Yes, that's gonna, exactly, yes. I went back and forth with my picks. There were years where I had considered, for example, like you said, Shuri was there last year, You could have easily picked her as the overall MVP. For this year, I went with Julia on 3 for the reasons I gave for the Yoshi MVP, but nowhere close to the top 2 that I had. I have Kenno and Miyahara on here too. I ultimately went with Kenno because I think this year he was so important to Pro Wrestling Noah. You said it, they didn't have a good year. And whatever Kenno did helped them out to outdo whatever stupid decision they went with. Whatever Kenno did, he erased the shadows that were over the company. And his YouTube channel is so successful. He's always the most focused guy on social media for Pro Wrestling Noah. He ended the year on top as GHC Heavyweight Champion. He always has the greatest matches in the company. He has a great following. He reinvented himself as Blue Kenno this year. He's a different character now that he in comparison to what he was in his days with Kongo. And overall, the biggest name for the company that they can show. Kento Miyahara, also, of course, very important figure for All Japan Pro Wrestling and key for developing talent like Ryokyo Honda. It has really been close. Ultimately, I thought that Kento Miyahara hasn't been the ultimately focused guy in All Japan Pro Wrestling this year. There have been others that carried the main event positions, but he was very important for the company's growth and for the company itself as an ambassador to going to the Tokyo Dome, getting a great reaction, going to Pro Wrestling Noah against Nakajima, getting a great reaction. So that is really the two that it should come down to, in my opinion.
What's your arguments against Yuma?
My argument against Yuma is the treatment in the final months of the year.
Yeah. Like that's the sad part, right? Because I think for most of the year he was the champion, so he was obviously more vital to the company, like, yes, at that point. But then the end of the year, he kind of, you know, he took such a big step back that it's kind of hard to ignore, right? Kenno's a great pick. Kind of like what I said about Nakajima, although they have a lot more money behind them, like Noah. But he's kind of like the glue that holds it together, you know, in a lot of ways. Where with Noah, no matter what's going on, you can always count on Kenno being, and sort of what you said about Julia as well. Like, he's somebody that's his name is known, even if you're not necessarily a big Noah fan, or you see his clips on, you know, Twitter or something like that. He's always one of the top guys for that end.
And he's so funny, too.
I don't know if that makes an MVP, but it's true. He is. I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying that wasn't one of my big candidacies for him overall. And he is. He's awesome. Like really cool guy. Great YouTube channel.
Remember when put him in the body bag?
Yes, that's right. The trash
that
bag.
Would have
buried
any other guy would have been buried, but Kenno made it work because he's so funny.
You're making a good case right now for Kenno. I do have to say, I feel bad because I think Aoyagi for the whole year was the most important, but like the end, like you said, that recency bias is still there. Like, and it was a tough fall off for him. You know, at the end, it's kind of like they determined that Kento was the more important guy themselves, let alone the fans. So I think it's rough. I think I'll still go with Yuma, though, because if you compare the 2 months to the 6-8 months that came before it, I think he was the most important player for All Japan. Whereas Kento, you could argue Nakajima was the more important guy the last 2 months, and you can't count that as an MVP case, in my opinion. So, I think narrowly I would go with Yuma, even though your point made I took well, and it made me think a little bit more, I have to say. Kenno deserves a lot of love, too. I think that was a great pick. Those are the top three to me. Yeah. Kento, Yuma, and Kenno would be by far the top three. And it just kind of, like, any of those would have been good picks, in my opinion. Everyone else, there's a step behind. But yeah. Kento wins. So overall, though, overall, by the fans voting in, I think it's a good pick. I think he would have been one of the ones he's definitely in my top three.
Yeah.
You have a lot of good case for him.
Let's look some of those that also got picks. Like, for example, Katsusada Higuchi. He's not essential.
Yeah, great worker, but not at the level of, in terms of push and vitality to the company overall that he meant.
For Fumino Abe, you can make a similar case as for Sari. He is absolutely essential to the independent scene.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think overall...
Okada? No.
That's the problem. I mean, he did some of his best work. If it was the half-year awards, him getting votes made a lot of sense. For the full year, he did draw one of their biggest houses in the G1 final, and I think he was a big part of that as much as Naito was as well. But overall, he's largely been in the six-man title scene. So, I wouldn't vote for him as MVP this year. But he had a great year. He did a great job.
Exactly. Naito, we discussed a couple of weeks ago on one of our shows. He's not buying it, not the focused player in 2023. We'll see where he lands at the end of this year.
This year he has a shot to where he could do it, but he did get the Tokyo Sports MVP, to be fair, for this past year.
He did, sure.
Big deal, very legit. Yeah, very, very legit.
Yeah, that concludes our 2023 Eastern Lariat Awards. Dylan, conclusive thoughts on it. Are you happy how this went?
Of course. I'm so happy that we got so many votes for it. It meant the world to me to see so much. Really accomplished a lot of goals. I mean, this almost doubled last year's end of year awards votes, which I was happy with last year. But this year, I'm really happy, obviously. The whole show really took a step forward.
That's key to it, I think. That really shows us that we do a lot of things right with this show, and I'm happy for that, that we always seem to grow our listenership. Very happy.
And I'm happy. Yeah, happy for that. Always new followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Instagram's done pretty well the last couple of months.
Shout out to you, Mar Fuji.
Yeah, that would be Mar Fuji following the Twitter, of course. Like I said, whenever we talk good about Mar Fuji, remember we're compromised.
Yes.
we cannot criticize him. He is our overlord, Namjoon Mar Fuji. He's just happy we spelled his name right when we tweeted about him, which Impact couldn't do when he was there.
Mar Fuji?
Yeah, they call him Marafugi with the G instead of the J.
Reminds me too of the time when Ring of Honor put that graphic out with Tetsuya Natsuo.
Oh my goodness! But I think all the voters were good. Like I said, all of the awards winners, I had different opinions. Of course, we all have different opinions, but I definitely saw all of them. I would say the strongest one would be the Julia one that I disagree with. But it's still your points made for her were also accurate as well. I can't argue those things either. So I really have, it's not like there was somebody I think oh my God, I can't believe so-and-so won like this one. Like this makes no sense. There's none of them that doesn't have a reason behind them, I would say. So I think the voters did a great job overall, and I'm very happy. Congratulations to all the winners. I made a lot of graphics eventually in the next coming weeks before, our next show. I'll put some graphics up for everybody, celebrate, keep track of the awards. They will go down in the annals of time as the Eastern Lariat Awards 2023 winners, and well-deserved. Thank you to the listeners as well for your participation.
Thank you very much. Which now brings us to the final part of the show, which we announced at the beginning. We are making the first two inductees for the Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame. Wrestlers that are important to the show or have been important to the show in its history. And you and I, Dylan, we had immediate thoughts who we wanted to induct to this Hall of Fame. And given the impact that your pick had on our show, the scene, and pro wrestling overall, I would like to make the start and offer you the main event position for the show, if you're okay.
You're welcome
with that.
No, absolutely. This was your idea and your plan, and I want to see it through to your vision, and I would love to hear what you have to say.
Since we can't have speeches from the individuals, we prepared...
Maybe one day we will.
Maybe one day we can. We prepared some facts and some bullet points to induct them into our Hall of Fame. The first ever inductee into the Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame is none other than Saki Akai. Saki Akai was born on January 24, 1987, a fashion model, talent, gravure model, actress. Her father was an actor and former professional boxer, Hidekatsu Akai. She had a twin sister that died very young. She started out her career with various modeling jobs and in 2009 landed her first big gig when she was selected as the 2009 K1 Image Girl. On July 3, 2013, it was announced that she would officially make a pro wrestling debut at DDT Peter Pan in Sumo Hall on August 18, where she won teaming with Cherry and Masa Takanashi against Hikaru Shida, Hiroshi Fukuda, and Yoshiko. She used the color red for her first gear that day. Her first steps in pro wrestling, however, she made in 2011, again, alongside Hikaru Shida, in a 10-minute exhibition match against Makoto and Tsukasa Fujimoto for Rice Ribbon. After making a debut for DDT, her stardom rose quickly to the point that she even challenged Yoshiko for the World of Stardom Championship at the year-end Climax 2014. Tokyo Sports, very controversially at the time, named her the Rookie of the Year 2014. She went on to call one of her finishing moves the Rookie Award. For an iconic photo, she posed with Hiroshi Tanahashi, the MVP winner of that year's Pro Wrestling Grand Prix. In her first 2 years, she won the Ironman Heavy Metalweight Championship twice and 24 times overall. The last reign started and ended on September 30, 2023. At Peter Pan 2015, she teamed with Genichiro Tenryu and Sanshiro Takagi to take on Shuji Ishikawa, Katsu Taniguchi, and Meiko Satomura, a match that saw Takagi defeat Higuchi with a sit-down Himawari bomb. On that show, she wore a new gear, the pure white costume with lace high neck. 2016 saw her in a feud with Lilico that spanned over big DDT shows in the first half of the year and culminated at Max Bump in April, where she put away Lilico with a sleeper hold. She also began wrestling for TJPW as a member of Bishikigun and later formed Neo Bishikigun as Saki-sama, a group that saw their biggest success capturing the Princess Tag title 3 times and saw their heyday in 2018 and 19. The group later made special appearances on big TJPW shows. The first rather highly ranked matches were against Shoko Nakajima in September of 2015 and Mio Yamashita in January 2017. However, she only competed for the Prince of Princes Championship 1 time at TJPW Stand Proud 2021 against Yamashita. What led to her growing popularity was her intergender wrestling in DDT. So in 2015 until the end of the group in 2019, she started to team regularly with Shuten Doji and thus her later stablemate in Eruption, Yukio Sakaguchi. She played the Aztec god Quetzalcoatl in the stage play Fate / Grand Order the Stage, Absolute Demonic Front Babylonia, and adapted the modified Gyakuchi used in the play as her wrestling move and named it after the character's name, the Quetzalcoatl. In 2019 also was the year of her getting more and more exposure and grasp of the structures and mechanics of pro wrestling as she started her Oki Bariyasu 7-match series in which she competed against Tsukasa Fujimoto, Sakura Hirota, Rina Yamashita, Miranda Gori, Shuri Saoriano, and finally against Meiko Satomura. Akai won 3 of these matches against Hirota, Gordy, and Ano. The formation of Eruption in January of 2021 cemented her popularity in DDT both in Japan and overseas. The group went on to win the KOD six-man tag team title twice and captured the All Japan Pro Wrestling World six-man tag team title, holding it simultaneously with the KOD title in 2023. On February 28, 2021, her photo book Lip Hip Shake pinned the Young Bucks autobiography and took the Ironman Heavy Metalweight Championship and held it for 14 days. 2021 also saw her branch out more and more to different groups such as Seed Ring, Marvelous Wave, and Sendai Girls. The highlight of that year, however, and also one of her highest rated singles matches, took place at Max Bump 21 in front of an empty Kirken Hall when she lost the Ironman Heavy Metalweight Championship to the Extreme Champion Chris Brooks. April 9, 2022, she formed a tag team with Yuki Arai called Reiwa AA Cannon, and they faced Rika Tatsumi and Mahiro Kiryu, and Arai finally got the pinfall in that match. Later the same year at Summer Sun Princess, they defeated the Magical Sugar Rabbits to win the Princess of Princess tag team title, which they lost to Wasteland War Party on January 4, 2023. At Judgment 2023, Saki Akai defeated Masahiro Takanashi in one of her final singles matches and then traveled to the US with DDT to face Britt Vixen and Dark Sheik at the Collective shows. On May 24, part of last year, she held a press conference to announce that she would retire after the Sumo Hall show on November 12th. And you mentioned it, Dylan, her road to retirement saw her team with Asuka, for example, with Asuka and Maya Yukihi to beat Rina Yamashita, Shoko Nakajima, and Takumi Iroha at Akai's 10th anniversary show on August 13, when she pinned Nakajima with the Quetzalcoatl. She had two defenses with the All Japan six-man tag team title before losing it to Maya Yuki, Mayumi Osaki, and Zuwama in October. And for the final time, on September 18th, she formed the Reiwa AA Cannon with Yuki Arai in Nagoya, and they defeated Yuki Aino and Moka Miyamoto. After the match, Arai asked Akai for her first and last one-on-one fight, and it was decided that it would be held in Kirken Hall on October 27th. There, Saki Akai took the win over Yuki Arai. Then finally, Ultimate Party 2023, DDT presented Saki Akai's retirement match, Strong, Noble, Beautiful. Akai teamed with Yuki Sakaguchi and Hideki Okatani against Naomi Chimura Fuji, Katsuhara Iguchi, and Mio Yamashita. Like I said earlier, after 20 minutes, everyone but Akai and Yamashita left the ring in order for Yamashita to hit her skull kick on Akai, putting a poetic end to her 10-year career. During her ceremony, her retirement ceremony, she received a request from President Takagi to remain in DDT as a behind-the-scenes staff member, which she accepted. 2 days later, she launched a retirement project on the crowdfunding site Dplot to give back to DDT, company that supported her for the past 10 years, and she plans to use the donation amount to give away new rings and training equipment to DDT and its wrestlers. And therefore, for this career, for Saki Akai always being a talked about topic on the Eastern Lariat, she very much grew on me in the last couple of years and improved a lot over these years. Therefore, Saki Akai is the first inductee to the Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame.
Well deserved, especially on the year that she enters her retirement stage, graduating from wrestling, as many people would say. Like you, you know, we've seen basically her whole career.
Yes.
God, on this show. And we've gone through the ups and the downs. Definitely early on, I really didn't think she was definitely more of a model than a wrestler for the first part of her career. But to grow from that and to put in the effort that she did and really grow into one of the, like, a very vital part of DDT itself, I think that shows how much heart she showed, how much she brought to the table, how much she was able to accomplish in her career. I think she's absolutely had a great career And you know, been a champion without a title most of the, you know, yeah, for most of it. She wasn't one of the main event players a lot of the times, but she made such an impact. And I think the retirement tour really cemented just how much she meant to almost everybody in Japanese wrestling, because she was wrestling in places she never had before, men's companies, which obviously she's known for at DDT, but even in All Japan, she got to hold an All Japan title.
Yeah, as a woman. Crazy, right?
Yeah, that's so amazing and such and well deserved. I got a great response. Everybody loved Eruption. Her legacy continues on through Sakaguchi and especially Okatani, who adopted the Quetzalcoatl as his finisher.
I tried to pronounce it right. I'm half.
No, no, you're good. you were fine. You were fine. But somebody that really appealed to everybody, did great work throughout her career, and like you said, started in a unique place. Did some great things. You know, she was somebody. She actually made an appearance in the game Ryuga Gotoku, also known as Yakuza 6. She, like, her body and her voice was also in the game as well. And we got to hear her sing a song, actually, in the karaoke minigame. I know some of my Yakuza fans out there are going to know what I'm talking about right now. Kanashiki Butterfly right now. But she was very talented.
Flosh is vibing right now.
I could go over that whole song, but I won't sing it as good as she did ultimately there. So I won't torture Striga with this. Let's after this great award show. So shall we put together on there? But she was great in it. Showed her talent, multi-talented ways, and she just had a lot of heart and passion for wrestling, which I love. You know, I always say, you know, a lot of times, especially when I wrestled, a lot of people in wrestling had a real grudge against, like, quote-unquote outsiders coming into wrestling. Maybe, and a lot of times it wasn't necessarily models. It was more like for guys, like, so in America, say a football player couldn't make it in the NFL that he went to wrestling. That would get a lot of heat automatically for everybody. But I actually think that's really cool. If you can come into a place and learn to love it and grow with it, I think that's just as valid as if you grew up with it. And Saki Akai really showed how much passion she had for wrestling, which is the greatest compliment you could give to any wrestler. So great pick on your part, and well done to start off the show.
Thank you, Dylan. And this brings us to your pick and the second inductee to the Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame.
That is correct. And I am definitely proud to announce on this award show, I didn't have the bullet point style things in terms of matches and moments and stuff. I had bullet points to say, and I'll give this speech how it goes, and we can judge how it goes.
Yeah, we did not hold a production meeting. We just went with it how we just thought it would be a good way to induct these wrestlers to the Hall of Fame. And I thought about talking this through with you, Dylan, but ultimately I thought it would be better if each of us just does it the way that that think it would be right.
Yeah. And I think for this nomination, I would want to speak from my heart anyway.
Absolutely.
So I'm still very proud to announce on this award show, which I've loved doing, and I'm so happy that we had such a great turnout. I hope everybody enjoyed the show for the whole year, but especially the award show. And thank you, Striga, for coming up with this Hall of Fame concept, which I love. You know, sometimes I feel like I always have all these ideas, and then when you come up with an idea, you really came through clutch with this one, and I really appreciate that. So this award show, spectacular, brought to you to the whole world by the Eastern Lariat, of course. And this particular portion, it's not as unlike the other awards. It's not as a result of any fan vote. Certainly not meant to serve like the purpose of highlighting the best of any singular year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, thanks to your thinking, we started this Hall of Fame, and it differs. You know, we mentioned it earlier. It differs from maybe how some other Hall of Fames do it. You know, maybe built upon the impact a wrestler has made on wrestling as a whole. But for this award, it's not just wrestling as a whole. It's specifically this very show, which we built into what it is today over 8 years. With the origins going back even further than that, with the original versions. But with those qualifications, it's going to lead us to think of who impacted us. And that can come through in various ways. You know, maybe their longevity in relation to the show. Like you said, with both of these nominees, we saw their whole careers through the lifetime of the Eastern Lariat. Maybe they had amazing moments in the ring, great matches, the kind we would talk about on the award shows and stuff like that. Maybe they challenged our thinking, kind of like Saki. They challenged us. You think one way at the start, we think about them as wrestlers, influenced us outside of the ring in some ways, or we were just really happy to see them influence not just us, but maybe the fan base as a whole, and what the feeling of seeing, especially for me, I get this feeling a lot. Maybe if it didn't even touch me that much, it could touch me if I see a number of people, more than just myself, having these amazingly happy moments, and sometimes their whole lives, you know? With certain performers, you could argue the impact they make reflects all of those things, bringing not just great feelings, but a true impact on us. And when I had the honor to pick a member for this first ever class in the Hall of Fame, I do got to say, for me, this was the no doubt, no brainer pick that there ever could be. I didn't think of anyone else. There's no doubt in my mind, the person who is a perfect representative of the Hall of Fame for the Eastern Lariat and in the inaugural class absolutely has to include the dangerous flower, Hana Kimura. I always say that wrestling is the closest form of entertainment to being a microcosm of life. I know you guys have heard that before. The wins and losses, the ups and downs, their meanings and importance on a micro level kind of change as time goes along, right? We even talked about it on the award show a little bit. Sometimes things will last with you. Sometimes you things you thought were great won't last, and we'll all change our minds and stuff. But the things that are truly special, what we always remember most in life, just like in wrestling, aren't necessarily the wins and losses, the successes, failures, but what you were made to feel, whether it's by a match or a person or a moment in life, that feeling stays. And so when it was my turn to pick, the choice was a no-brainer. There are so many emotions and things we were made to feel by Hana, who I think a vast majority of our listeners would agree touched all of them in a similar way. And not just for one thing, but for everything years in. You know, going back to her start, she was born into wrestling, you know, through her mother, Kyoko. She had a very successful career in her own right, take nothing away from her. And Hana, you know, technically it goes back, I posted this on Twitter when this all started, but technically her first match took place before she was even 10 years old, which saw her become the DDT heavy metalweight champion in her first match, defeating Tandy Mouse, a longtime comedy wrestler at the time, and then Kyoko beat her back for the title as well. So right away, she was right in there from the beginning, from when she was born, from what she meant. That was all a part of her journey. Then she continued on, even a few years later. She was a part of these shows that were kind of in between before Stardom started, after JD Star, these Fuka Festival shows. Hana was a big part of that, to try to become a dancer, try to become an idol, which I think a lot of young girls in Japan have that dream as well, which Hana had as well. She came in there. Obviously, her stage name was Hana. She started off, she was a ring girl in Pancrase as well. You know, around the time she started wrestling, which her stepdad was a fighter for. Her, you know, her name again, Hana, there, always staying by true to her name. But that led to her training with Wrestle One. She was like, for the early portion of her career, even though she was young, she was really their crown jewel, their prized girl. And she wrestled all across the indies. Many of the people she wrestled had already wrestled her mom years before, and it gave her a very streamlined path of growth, which she used wonderfully to turn into the kind of performer that, you know, could be set to carry company on her back and win tournaments, which many people, myself included, think that she was being primed for anyway. But even before that, we saw how much she owes to this day, but even at the start of her career, to her mom. You know, this induction is practically for her as much as Hana herself, because of how much she meant and how much she's kept her name alive with her tribute shows, which always means so much. Overall, but for Hana, from the indies going to Stardom, from joining Oedo Tai just like her mom and leaving, to her colorful, very funky and wild attire, even out to who she was just becoming as a wrestler in the ring, she was really hitting her stride and having some awesome matches and leaning into her brawling style, which really came through. And she had the honor to compete in her mom's final true match, and at the same show she teamed with Kyoko and her stepdad Isao, who is an MMA fighter as well. I just think back to that moment and what a thrill it had to be for all of the family, you know, to wrestle and taking that torch from Kyoko just as special, right? On a personal level, I really relate to Hana too. You know, a lot has been made of her being half Indonesian and the trouble she sadly experienced through it growing up and how much of a big part of people would talk about. But also the fact is that her blood father was out of her life when she was still just a baby. You know, never mind the fact that my own blood father was a different race than my mom. I never got to meet him either. You know, and I never knew the kind of love from a mom that's a lot of people would say, especially that Kyoko showed Hana. And that always meant so much to me. It makes me so happy when I think about how much Kyoko loved her and meant so much to her. And really, she was the reason that she got into wrestling in the first place. And Kyoko never resented her or blamed her for who her dad was or what race she was or any of that crap. She gave so much to Hana and helped raise both a wonderful child and wrestler. And despite the fact that Hana went through hard times, Hana showed her true spirit because, just like I said at the start, impact. She impacted so many people that had met her. She touched the heart of her many friends in wrestling and fans all over the world. Basically, day one, she was a favorite of everybody, like even before she became a star. And, you know, on the Eastern Lariat, we literally experienced her entire tragically short career, unfortunately. You know, Flourish, her team with Vinny, Asuka at the time, was one of the most popular acts in Wrestle 1. They formed a tight-knit friendship beyond the ring, often shown together on social media. They would make little videos with Oedo Tai. She basically stepped into being a focal point right away. And even when being inexperienced, she was clearly being set up to be a top star. You could tell they saw it in her right away. And she was taken directly under the wing of not just her mom, but also Kagetsu, the leader of Oedo Tai at the time. They won the Goddesses of Stardom titles together early on, and that led to her striking out on her own, wrestling all over the world, telling people everywhere, "Don't boo me, I'm right," in Mexico, and one of my favorite memes to this day. She reached the world beyond Japan, which is something she clearly enjoyed, you know, traveling around the world, and wrestling was the the spark plug for that. She reemerged as the leader of her own faction, the Tokyo Cyber Squad. Worked together with many wrestlers, not just in Stardom, but the international talent they would bring in. And winning, she won the artist titles with Konami and Jungle Kiona, and also formed a true bond of friendship with them as well. Particularly Kiona, who deserves so much of this world, and she meant so much to. You know, in the ring, Kiona was definitely a big part of that help too. But in the ring, Hana again, she was really growing. Really becoming a great wrestler as time went along. She had big-time matches, and a lot of those are well worth watching this day, by the way, if y'all want to check those out. She had matches versus Kagetsu, Julia, Konami, all of her tag matches, her five-star matches, like against Hazuki. That's my personal favorite. I still remember that match to this day. And although her career was cut short, I wanted to go back in time to our tribute episode, which we recorded just a couple of days after her sad death, and all of the fresh and raw emotions we felt and shared with the folks listening, which I think everybody felt as well. But I remember, I still go back to that show, and I remember I said I had hoped and prayed for Hana to not just be remembered for the last and worst day of her life. There are so many good things to remember about her, and her happy thoughts that she brought to us all. She was a happy person for most of her life, no matter what life threw at her. She was a strong wrestler, but even more than that, she had a strong heart. She was a literal TV star. She was known all around the world. She got to be in the MMA ring girl deal. She started music videos. She was popular online, just an absolute star wherever she went. And she knew it. You know, she was beautiful, strong, kind, sexy, earnest, had a great work ethic. She was stylish. She was just so freaking cool. And she was a great wrestler and a person that will forever live on in so many people's hearts. And I'm going to quote her mother, Kyoko, before I leave it here. When, in her words, she said, "If you're in pain, Hana will be in pain too. Please keep the fun and lively memories of Hana in your hearts." And I remember on that show we recorded, it's up to you to determine if those fears came to pass. I didn't want her to be remembered for the last day. But I can promise you this. Hana Kimura, we love you and miss you so much. And as long as I'm around and have any kind of voice in this wrestling game, and as long as this show, Eastern Lariat, is around, you won't be remembered for that day. Hana Kimura will be remembered for how great she truly was, how she should be remembered. Hana Kimura will be remembered as a Hall of Famer. Congratulations for that.
Congrats, Hana, and I really think
that these have been very emotional words on your end and very true words. I loved the episode that we did. It was almost therapy for us at that point, just talking about her career and the impact that she had on the scene. I think that the impact can't be overstated. There's so many people in wrestling that have fond memories of Hana Kimura, and the tribute shows, the memorial shows really show that. It has come to the point that it is a celebration of her life, and that's really what we should remember. You mentioned the friendship with Asuka. Flourish has been one of my favorite teams back in the Wrestle One days.
Yeah.
It has been an incredible journey, and I'm so happy that we were here and able to witness and cover it. And now we have decided to give her the second place in the inductee in the Eastern Lariat Hall of Fame for good reason. Hana Kimura has been a vital part of this show for the last couple of years, and it will continue on. Like you said, we will never forget Hana Kimura. And that's where we stand at the beginning of 2024.
Absolutely. And the Hall of Fame will continue on for years to come. And these wrestlers that are in it, who made an impact on us and the show and the fans, they'll always have a place in there, and they'll be remembered how they should. And I think that's, for her especially, is very important. So very happy that we can honor both the inductees. We're well deserving, I would say. Hana, to me, was definitely, and again, I bring it back to Kyoko. I love that we have these tribute shows now for Hana, every year. At first, it was all these emotions, and as times went along, it's really led to the great part of these. It's obviously a tragic circumstance, but it keeps Hana's name alive. It keeps her remembered in the good ways as well. And it's something I really believe in, and I love what Kyoko's doing. I so admire her so much that she's helped keep her daughter's memory alive in a good way. And hopefully, in some small way, the Eastern Lariat will also help keep her memory alive as well. Hopefully all in the best ways, the good memories we can share that we all felt from her.
Absolutely. So, Dylan, that is it. Episode done. I'm really happy how this turned out.
Absolutely.
I can't add any more. I wouldn't have done it any other way. This is how the listeners presented it for us, how we decided to have the Hall of Fame. I'm happy.
Absolutely. It couldn't have gone better. Like the awards themselves, I was so impressed and so happy. Again, I cannot thank all of the listeners enough. All of the people who voted, no matter who you were, what you did, maybe you have your own show. Some people out there host their own shows and came on to vote for this. Some of them are just loyal listeners and people that always vote for the awards. And we have so much love for you guys. I always say that the fans make the show more than anything else. And like I said, getting nominated for the award was cool. It's like vindication and all of that stuff. I have what I need from the fans of the Eastern Lariat. Yes. I don't need an award to tell me that we've done a good job on the show. I know that our listeners have come through for me personally on many levels. Like I said, no matter what's going on, they have just always came through, like I said. And I have so much love for the listeners out there. And these awards, hopefully, because you guys all delivered for sure, I hope that we delivered in your thoughts as well. A wonderful show that we hope it is, and hopefully the Hall of Fame will continue to succeed and be a great thing like it was this year. And I promise, I've made some graphics. I showed some of them to Striga too about the Hall of Fame. We're going to put that up there. I'm going to put that as like the header on the YouTube and the Instagram, and maybe you can put it on Twitter if you want. Maybe we need more people. I don't know. But we're going to make sure that the Hall of Famers always have a place in the Eastern Lariat, and all of the award winners will be coming through as well. But I put a lot of work into them, and hopefully, as I said, you guys were amazing I hope that we fulfilled our end of the bargain to you all as well.
Hopefully, yes. So thank you for your votes. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.